You're listening to The Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, otherwise known as The Lamb. The Lamb is the world's biggest collection of online movie blogs, and every week on this show we invite various Lamb members on to talk about pretty much everything in our movie-loving worlds. Find The Lambcast at largeassmovieblogs.com.
You've managed to obtain the location of our secret lair and have penetrated our defenses and found your way into the volcano. You've arrived just in time to participate in Lambcast episode 481, where we're planning a particularly humiliating experience for you, and death may be involved, at least metaphorically. I'm your host this week. You may refer to me as number one, although I also go by a cover name, Richard Kirkham. In addition to heading Spectre, I run the sites Kirkham A Movie A Day and the Strother Martin Film Project. Comrade Kronstein is unavailable to explain the perfect plan he has for you today. He needed a new pair of shoes. The last pair he wore were too pointy for him. Replacing him as number two, the head of our planning for organization, is a man whose shoes are not nearly as pointy as his head. No, it's not Emilio Largo, but rather the regular host of the Lambcast, from Life or Let Film, Jay Cluett.
Hi, Richard.
Welcome, my friend. And yes, I expect you to talk.
I'm glad you introduced me before everybody else, because, of course, on the Lambcast, men come first, and women sometimes don't come at all.
Gross.
S-A-F.
Oh, my God.
S-A-F.
I may retire here.
Starting off
also there. Sitting around the planning table, occupying an electrified chair and hoping that we don't notice that she's managed to hide two incredibly large swords in her headpiece. No, she doesn't live twice. It's just that living in Milwaukee makes everything feel twice as long. It's that fangirl who believes her adventures would not make a very good Bond film. My apologies for the way you were brought here. I wasn't sure you'd accept a formal invitation. Jeanette Ward.
Mr. Kirkham, do you expect me to talk?
Of course. I also expect you to give us a bath. Next, her methods are very exacting, and she does not like to speak until absolutely certain that there is no possibility of error. We all hope to live up to her high standards. I'm not sure if our next agent's area of expertise extends to lepidoptery. I can tell you, however, that she does not need a man to dominate her. But if that 1,000,000 pounds in gold for a dowry is available, then Heather, so am I. The Queen of Cups in an upside-down position from Heather Time in the MILFcast, Heather Baxendale.
Oh, Richard, it seems you've caught me with more than my hands up.
Feeble.
I'll take that for
Finally, a notorious killer of good times, it's rumored that he has Byzance for real, not just on his coat of arms. No one is willing to ask if his collars and cuffs match. They say he has the body of Rock Hudson, but no one can prove that it was his shovel left at the cemetery. Anyway, he always did have an inflated opinion of himself. And why not? He actually knows a third way to disable a crocodile. And 1,001 movies on his podcast as well. Sean Homrig.
This never happened to the other fellow.
But it's going to happen to you over and over again. In case you've not guessed it, we've arrived at our second James Bond franchise look back. We're going to feature four films today, starting with You Only Live Twice, then moving on to George Lazenby's only appearance as Bond, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, and then the return of Sean Connery to the role in Diamonds Are Forever, and then finally the introduction of Roger Moore as Bond in Live and Let Die. That's right, you get three different Bonds as well as three different Blofelds in this podcast, and none of them are David Niven or Woody Allen.
Thank God.
But before we begin our trek through 1960s sexism and 1970s racism, we have a more contemporary franchise to discuss. Someone on this show must still need to rate the Jurassic Park franchise. I'm just not sure who it is. Jay, I leave it to you.
Well, Jeanette has been on this show many times to listen to other people ranking the Jurassic. I think it's like 15 times, I think, she's been on here to listen to other people. So today, it's Sean's turn. Sean!
Oh, God.
Sean, please rank the Jurassic Park films.
Okay, so, clutch your pearls. I'm going to say the first is Jurassic Park, the first one, okay. Then Jurassic World, Jurassic Park 3, Jurassic World, Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and then the last one. No, I think it's the last one is second to last, and then The Lost World is the last.
Oh, that's, this is,
how interesting.
That's incorrect.
You're broken.
Ask me tomorrow and it'll change, but not the first and the last probably.
Okay,
but
why do you hate The Lost World so much?
I despise the last act. I think it ruins almost the entire movie. But when you think about it, the rest of the movie is pretty decent. I think that Jurassic Park 3 is severely underrated. I don't get it.
It's terrible.
But the last act of The Lost World is the talking velociraptors of the series for me. It's just ridiculous. I can't stand it. It changed the tone of the movie changes so drastically. The dog, for instance. I mean, please. Please.
Yeah, they killed the dog.
The giant rolling 76 ball? Come on.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Godzilla reference?
Yes, the Godzilla reference.
Okay, so exactly. if you'd said you hated The Lost World because of the girl, then I get it, because I hate the girl. And the gymnastics.
The gymnastics.
But I don't mind the last sequence. But it's fine. It's fine. But
T-Rexes in San Diego. That works.
Yeah, the bits and pieces are great. The raptor sequence in the long grass is great.
I cannot walk past long grass without quoting this film.
Yes, every time. Don't go into the long grass!
And then he goes into the long grass.
Yep, everybody drops his bag first.
Alright, well, now that we have that out of the way...
let's go with the less important part of the show.
Yeah. Let's talk about Bond. Traditionally, we begin our discussion with a little bit of introduction by our guests and their background with James Bond, our international man of mystery. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's a different series. Jeanette, how about you? Can you give us fill us in a little bit on your background with James Bond and the franchise?
Yeah, this is one where my parents were big fans, and so I kind of grew up watching a bunch of them. And yes, it feels like one of them is always on TV at some point, somewhere. I feel like everybody has, if you're a Bond fan or even a quasi fan, if you're just a casual fan, I think everybody has their favorite Bond. And I think everyone can acknowledge that maybe their favorite Bond is not the best Bond. I think you kind of end up with your favorite Bond being your first Bond, the Bond you encounter when you first step into the series. I know for me, Roger Moore has always been my favorite. I'll acknowledge he might not be the best, but he's my favorite because he was the first one I saw, the first one I became familiar with. Because my parents were fans of these, they let us watch them when we were younger. So my brothers and I would, it felt like a treat when we got to watch a Bond film. For the most part, there's not a ton of not kid safe stuff in them. The innuendo is very overlaying, but for the older ones, there's not a ton of gratuitous violence. There's not a ton of sex aside from what's implied, which is a lot. But yeah, so I've always had kind of a soft spot for Bond in that he felt like somebody I grew up with. He felt like a character I was familiar with. He felt like he was family friendly to a level, because my parents were such fans. My dad was always very particular to Connery, of course, that being his first Bond, but Roger Moore is my favorite. Live and Let Die is my favorite movie. Again, willing to admit, maybe not the best. And then I think the songs. I love a series that doesn't hesitate to be this formulaic. And I think the early Bond movies are very formulaic, and I love that about them. Like, there's a pre-song bit. You get the song, which is usually awesome. Then you get Bond showing up in M's office. What do you know about this, Bond? And then Bond says everything about it because he knows everything about everything. And then he goes off on his mission, sleeps with four or five different chicks whose name you don't remember, ends up with one that you do, saves the day, and everything's fine. I love that sense of formula with the early ones. I think they're super fun. want that sense of fun in my Bond, and I think that's what was missing for me when Daniel Craig first stepped in, was the lack of fun, because to me that feels intrinsic in the character. Having not read any of the novels, just watched the movies, I want a sense of fun, not to the level of being a spoof, but to the level of that Bond never takes himself too seriously. He's there to have a good time while he's saving the world. So that's my fondness for the character and the movies.
Well, that seems pretty extensive and lots of fun. I think, by the way, you just wrote the screenplay for Bond 25. I like that whole setup. It works out fine for me. All right, Sean, how about you? How about some background?
Well, I saw the first Bond movie that I saw years ago was Goldfinger. My dad showed it to me. You know, you got to show your son a Bond movie. It didn't really impress me that much. But then I bought a book called Cult Movies by Danny Perry. Or maybe it was Cult Movies too. But one of the Bond movies was in it. It was on Her Majesty's Secret Service. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to watch all the movies in this book. Sound familiar? And I ended up watching Honor Majesty's Secret Service, loved it, and then from then on tried to watch as many as I could. I would buy them on VHS and stuff. The first one that I remember seeing in the movie theater was GoldenEye. So Pierce Brosnan is kind of like my James Bond. He's my first Bond. Well, technically, maybe James Lazenby is my first Bond. Or no, Sean Connery is my first Bond. But I feel like if I say he's my favorite, it's like saying Tom Baker or David Tennant is your favorite Doctor Who. It's just like that's what everybody says. So I think my favorite remains Pierce Brosnan. And I watch them every time one of them comes out. I'm there at the theater watching them, and they haven't really disappointed me yet. You know, some are better than others. Some are more memorable than others. But, you know, what I love about them is, as Jeanette said, it's, you know, it's a formula, and they've more or less kept the formula ever since 1960, whatever. I can't remember when Dr. No came out. But, you know, like as a Doctor Who fan, it's like, oh yeah, it's the same but different throughout all these years. So yeah, that's how I got into it. And this particular block, even though it's not Pierce Brosnan, it is some of my little favorites are in here, my guilty pleasures that we're about to talk about. So yeah.
If Diamonds Are Forever is one of your guilty pleasures, we will have to talk.
Uh-oh.
Would the Pierce Brosnan of Doctor Who's be Christopher Eccleston, do you think?
No, that would be Timothy Dalton, probably. I think Pierce Brosnan is more of a Matt Smith. Yeah.
All right. Doctor Who references aside, Heather, what did you think?
Tangents!
Tell us about your background.
Growing up, it was the same thing with my parents. It was on a lot, but it was more of a straight science fiction and kind of action house for the most part. So they were on, but I never really got into them as a kid. I, like Sean, kind of came in with Pierce Brosnan. He's my favorite Bond. My oldest son is named Brosnan.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of followed through. He's 16 now. He's my favorite, though I arguably not necessarily the best. I probably would say Connery is the best, but I love Brosnan. I love Pierce Brosnan. I tried to name my most recent child Dalton, but that didn't go over.
Wait,
so
could you have had a kid called Lazenby?
That's a great name.
That would suit Liam. See, I can replace all of these. I can fix all of my kids' names.
Craig is a normal name. That's fine.
I got into it later, though. I think I was in my late teens by that point. And then I just kind of fell in love with them. They are ridiculous, and they're cheesy, but they're fun. And there's a familiarity about each of them. Every time you watch one, you don't necessarily have to even fully immerse yourself in them to just enjoy them. And I think I kind of got lost in the Daniel Craig ones too, because it wasn't that they were bad films. They're quite good, but I didn't feel that connection to it in the same way. Yeah. And I know that was the point.
Gone.
Yeah. So I still appreciate them for what they are, but I mean, I love the good and the bad about all of these.
Okay. Well, that's great. Look, Jay and I have both talked about our background with Bond on the first franchise entry in this series, so we probably won't spend a lot of time on that. I will just let you all know that I am worshiping in the House of 007 at the current moment. This is one of those shrines that exists in Southern California. All right? So,
and the four films we're talking about today, I haven't seen. I'd seen Live and Let Die a couple of years ago during what's known in my house as the Great Brownie Bake of 2017, where I had spend a whole day. Oh, no, it was fudge, great fudge making of 2017. I spent an entire day making fudge in preparation for my wedding. And so I just set up a TV in my lounge, in my kitchen, and watched films all day making fudge.
You made your own fudge for your wedding?
I made my own fudge, my own brownies. I folded 1,000 origami cranes. I did quite a lot involved for my wedding.
Wow.
I get so little credit for this.
You're getting credit now, Jay.
But yeah, there was a solid day. I think it was 5 or 6 films I watched that day, just in my kitchen, just making fudge for hours and hours and hours. One of them was Live and Let Die. Because this was also in preparation for the Bond draft we were doing on our 400th show.
If I could do that for the rest of my life, I would die a happy man.
Okay. Watch James Bond and make fudge?
Just watch movies and make anything, you know?
I don't get paid for this.
Every Christmas, I spend all day making cookies, and then we watch Die Hard, so I guess it's close.
Yeah, but the other three films I hadn't seen in a long time and remembered very little from them. I remembered, like, there's some plastic surgery in one of them, and I think they make fun Japanese, but surely they don't do that. Surely not. That's like an Austin Powers thing or something. They wouldn't make Sean Connery Japanese. No.
Well, he wasn't. They said he was.
Which then it magically disappeared too, so you know.
Yeah. All right.
Which is Papers, a good thing.
References aside, here's what I thought we would do. Traditionally, we'd do a film by film discussion, but I thought maybe we'd switch it up a little bit and instead organize our discussion around particular elements in the series. So focusing on the four films and talking about those elements in particular. That way it'll, I think, change it up a little bit, allow for a little bit more debate on some of these things, and comparison, if there's not exactly debate on those points. So some of the elements that I picked out were the Bonds, the villains, the Bond girls, the gadgets, plots, production design, set pieces, secondary characters, title themes, and then anything else that you guys would like to cover as well.
So you're aiming for a longer show than last time. Okay.
That would be my goal. That would be my goal, but of course,
should I clear my afternoon?
Like I said, it is a full mass today.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's start with the Bonds, because this is an interesting block of films. We actually get three different James Bonds, one who left and returned, one who appears only once, and one, this is his debut in the 007 canon. So does anybody want to start with one of the Bonds and tell us what you thought of their performance, their fulfilling the role of James Bond in one of the films, and then we can make some comparisons?
Should we start with Connery?
Yeah.
We can always start with Connery.
Yes.
Let's start with the guy who wanted it to end.
Yeah. Hey, Connery is...
He's not really present.
Yes, sleepwalking is what I wrote down. My notes say sleepwalking through... Both of them, yeah, and in this block, it's You Only Live Twice and Diamonds Are Forever. Now, he seems to be even worse than Diamonds Are Forever, but he seems truly, truly disinterested all the time. And I think he felt that way for several of his Bond movies, and I think that's why he's, like, on my list of Bonds near the bottom. Sorry, I know that's blasphemy, but I just don't care for him in this.
I thought that was part of his take on Bond, though, is he's more aloof and kind of just, yes,
I'm attached.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's kind of what I always got from him. I definitely felt it in Diamonds Are Forever a lot more. And out of all the ones I watched, that was the one I was most actually disinterested in. And I've seen that one the most. But I found it to be kind of fun. And it if anything, it gave me a lot of good laughs in You Only Live Twice. Like, oh, he doesn't care about the naked woman here. Oh, he just got shot and killed, and he even looks kind of like he's whatever in his death.
Mm-hmm. A little waxy.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, I've got it. It's fine. I'll come back.
Yeah.
Can I ask? I have a question. I know the answer to this question. I knew it at one time. Why did Connery leave for one movie and then come back?
Okay, he was under contract, and he still had one film left after You Only Live Twice, but he was let out of his contract because he was so disinterested in the first one. But he didn't want to do it anymore because of how much he was being hounded by the press. This is part of it, at least. Where during the filming of You Only Live Twice, the Japanese reporters were... Like, he'd go into a public restroom and they'd be taking photos of him over the stool.
Yeah, I think
and
I remember
he didn't want to do that anymore, which I can understand. So he,
the circus that goes along with being James Bond, that got to be a little wearying, and he wanted out.
Yeah. And then I think the official response was to pursue other career opportunities.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And he did make other films.
Two more Bond films.
Yeah.
So then why didn't they bring George Lazenby back?
Did you not see the film?
Lazenby. No, he had an agent who said to him, no, you can't do any more of these. Because he was booked for seven of them. And his agent told him, you're going to be typecast. You don't want to do this. You're going to have so many more opportunities to do other things. Which, by the way, this dude had never acted before. He was an Australian male model. Yeah. And his agent is telling him, oh, no, you don't want to do any more of these. You need to get out. So he promptly did one and left, which, thank God, because what an illustrious career he had.
Opening supermarkets.
Right, the movie. You're talking about Connery. We obviously have to go to Lazenby here.
Yeah.
Well, from what I've heard on the subject of Lazenby, he is like currently the wealthiest of all the former Bonds in terms of investments he's made outside of the Bond franchise. Like, he used his money well. If that's true, great, good for him. He was clearly better suited to not being Bond, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay, and I don't know, this is the only one that I've never seen any of, not even 5 minutes of before. So I'd heard nothing but the horror stories of how terrible he was. So maybe my low expectations bumped up his performance a little bit, but he wasn't as bad as I thought he was going to be.
No,
He's not as stiff as people portray him.
No.
He looks the part pretty well. Yes. He looks fantastic in the suits.
Yes, absolutely.
I think part of the problem is that the director and editor wanted the scenes where he's fighting to look better, and so they speed up the action. They make it look like there's something a little bit different going on, and he comes across as a little bit more cartoonish as a result. Most of the scenes he's in are perfectly fine, and like I said, I think he looks the part. People talk about how boring he is. I don't find him all that boring at all. In fact, the only part where he's boring is when he's supposed to be boring, when he's portraying Hilary Bray.
I mean, he's great though.
Isn't he dubbed over there too?
Yes, he's dubbed by the guy who actually plays the real Hilary Bray. I say the real Hilary Bray, the real fiction Hilary Bray.
Is that explained by he's using a voice changer or anything?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
In the same way that I think 75% of characters are dubbed in all of these films. So
yeah.
Which fine. The guy who plays Tanaka in You Only Live Twice is horrendously dubbed. But I get why people don't like Lazenby, because I'm one of them, and I couldn't remember his performance in this. I'd heard the horror stories as well, same as Heather, but I'd seen it before. I just couldn't remember anything terribly bad. But I think the boring parts, that's more due to the story than his performance.
Yeah,
Give it away. I'm not a big fan of Her Majesty's Secret Service. That's going to come out a bit more and more discussion. But of these four films, it's the one I liked the least. So.
Of the notes I had, I wrote down three different times on it. This one's kind of boring.
Yes,
yeah.
I consider this
boring.
Different.
No.
Yeah.
No, no, no.
Oh, it's
the first act. No. More than an hour and a half in.
Yeah, I consider this to be the Attack of the Clones of the Bond franchise. For various reasons.
Oh, see, but I could. There's a whole discussion we can have there, but I'll wait.
Too much involved in romance. A kind of wooden lead actor. There's a few other comparisons I can make. Very little going on action-wise.
Okay. I feel like all of them have a certain. Even when Connery's being aloof, he still has a smoldering charm about him. That he's smug son of a bitch, but I mean, he still has that charm and charisma. And I think all of the other Bonds have one form of that or another. And Lazenby, I did not get that from. I got, he is very handsome. He's quite lovely to look at. But he could have stood there and been a mannequin, too.
Well, he was accused of
prior job experience.
I did enjoy his gun barrel turn though. There's a lot of spin, a lot of arms going everywhere, a lot of flair to it.
Flair, yes.
But at least it isn't 7 years old like Connery's was on Diamonds Are Forever.
But at least it was Connery doing it. It hasn't been in some of them.
The difference on Her Madge stands out because, it's different from the others because it's less of an action movie. It has action sequences in it. It's more of a mystery. You know, in the other ones, in Diamonds Are Forever and You Only Live Twice, all of the other ones, he's going from one place to another place to meeting different people. This has an encore cast, or an ensemble cast, I should say. Not an encore cast. He arrives at this place. He doesn't know what's going on. He knows there's something bad, but it takes most of the movie for him to finally figure it out that they're all being hypnotized. It's really fucking absurd, but whatever. What isn't absurd in these movies? You know what I mean? But it's a great little mystery. And that's really what I enjoyed about it. And it doesn't have as much action as the others. Although the action sequence on the luge with Telly Savalas is
that was awesome.
Quite interesting. Yeah, yeah.
That was fun.
As well as the Christmas themed car chase in the Austrian town or German town, Swiss town. But it's one of the first ones that I really got into and I really enjoy watching it. And, you know, I like mysteries. So, I do agree when, I think it was UJ that mentioned that the action is sped up sometimes. That is so, weary.
Jarring?
Jarring. And I hate when they do that in films.
Yeah. A little bit of an affectation in this film. It happens like three or four places and it just looks like, wait, what's happening?
I don't like it. It's not a Bond film. Stop it.
Well, and why the line that I think we this never happened to the other film.
Oh, I hate
please
it so
explain.
Much. God.
Why? Yeah. Why?
It's you had to acknowledge.
No, you don't.
No. You had to. They had to acknowledge that this was a change.
I disagree.
Yeah.
This is their wink at the audience. It lasts, a brief moment. And then we're off to the rest of the film, and it never comes up again.
But it
happens in that opening sequence, and I think it's simply an acknowledgement to all the people who had been fans of the series, and it's their way of smiling and saying, "Yeah, we're still going, we're still here."
They were being meta before meta was a thing, and then meta started getting tiring. It works, I think, for the time that it was, and you just, go past it. And I love the fact that instead of a traditional song sung by, Nancy Sinatra or whomever, we've got an instrumental piece with clips of the other James Bond films and the villains and the girls and all that, as if to tell us, hey, it's going to be the same thing, only just a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna come back to the title themes in a little bit, and that's definitely one thing that I wanted to talk about. I did want to kind of focus on the Bonds for the moment, and we've talked quite a bit about Mr. Lazenby and his solo turn as 007. We've given Sean Connery grief for his wooden, waxen walkthrough performances in these two Bond films. We have yet to talk about the freshest Bond in at least our four films here, and apparently some people's favorite Bond, Mr. Roger Moore. The late Sir Roger. Jeanette, you sounded like you were a fan, so we should probably start with you.
And I think what it comes from is the ease that to his credit, he had played James Bond in a sketch on a TV show in 1964 prior to stepping into the role when it was offered to him. He had been Simon Templar on The Saint, the TV show, so he was comfortable with playing easy, breezy, charming spy, etc., kind of do-gooder. Roger Moore brings this sense of – he takes aloof and spins it to charming, but still always 100% in control even when he's not in control. But brings a sense of – and not fun, but fun to a different level where he knows what everybody's doing even when he doesn't know what's happening. He remains above and beyond the situation. But his grace and his charm are so much more evident, and he wanted to make sure his felt different than Connery's, which I think is a key, but he wanted to be Bond, but a different Bond, and I think he did a really good job of being, this is Bond you felt more familiar with, even after Connery having played him first. Connery was not involved with anybody. He remained detached. He remained above. He remained, his sarcasm and one-liners felt snarky, whereas Moore was able to bring this odd sense of charm to his sarcasm, which, oh my God, his one-liners are constant. He is just too cool for everything. And you want to talk about wearing the suits, especially in Live and Let Die, his first one. When he walks out of the airport, come on. This is a dude who...
He's got a tailored overcoat that looks fantastic.
He is one of the most attractive ones in the first couple. And yeah, I love his ease about it. He just feels like he's always been Bond. He's always going to be Bond. His introduction, one of the things I watched mentioned that in some of the other movies, Bond gets like a piecemeal entrance. Like you see the cigarette first, you see this first, the face is kind of hidden for a big reveal. Moore's introduction, he's laying a bed.
Yep.
As if like, yeah, I've always been here. This is it. This is what
this
I do.
This is my spot. Right here.
Oh, yeah, hello.
Yes, exactly. So it's a different vibe, but I appreciate the different vibe.
He was one of the last ones that I cognitively experienced, and I was pleasantly surprised. I think he's probably one of the more fun of all of them. I think in some level he's more, I like what you're saying, he's more over entertaining, if anything.
Yes.
I'm more present in what he's actually saying, as opposed to him being a tool for the plot and moving through it, which you definitely get with Connery in the last few ones. But with him, it's I'm more watching him and going through it with him and experiencing it that way. I like him a lot. He is definitely one of the best. He's wonderful.
He's there for the audience. It felt like Connery was there for either the paycheck or the story, which, and there's nothing wrong with being there for the story, but I think Moore was more aware of the potential of Bond and was there for the audience and played into that.
He seemed like he enjoyed it, which, I mean, that makes you enjoy it more, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Jay, did you have some thoughts?
I did. You know, Richard, that Roger Moore is not my favorite Bond. In fact, on the last show, I called him the worst Bond. This is based on, apparently, my failing memory. Because if we're looking at these four films here, he's the best Bond in all four of them.
Yep.
Because, well, Connery is checked out, Lazenby's questionable. But Moore, he's very much... He's a very good Bond here. He's super smooth. Just super smooth. The reason I haven't liked him is because, as I said before, the last time I watched all of these films, I watched them all in one go. Just in like a week. I watched all 23 at that point. And 22 at that point. And by the time you get to the seventh Roger Moore film in a row, starts to get a little bit grating. If you watch them all in like a day and a half. And so I think that had really tarnished my opinion of him as a Bond. So looking at him here, coming off of Let Himself Go a Little Bit Connery in Diamonds Are Forever, who just doesn't care and doesn't want to be there. You then go into Roger Moore, who wants to be there. He wants to be there, he wants to do the job, but he's going to have a good time doing it. And I'm here for that. I'm here for the one-liners, maybe slightly too many, I don't know. just in conjunction with some of the other comedic beats of Live and Let Die, cough, Sheriff J.W. Pepper, cough. who, again, in my memory, I loved him, but not in my memory, didn't love him. didn't need him. Now he comes back, looking forward to that. Gonna talk about him again on the next batch, I'm sure. But yeah, I take back the negative things I said about Roger Moore at this point. I reserve the right to bring them back again when we start getting into like Moonraker or A View to a Kill. So I'm not signed off yet, but I take back what I said before. It's a good Bond here, in this one, specifically.
Sean, did you have something to say before I start chiming in?
No, I think everybody's more or less said everything that I think. I do not disagree that he's a great Bond in Live and Let Die. I think that maybe he's overshadowed by a somewhat bizarre story. It's really somewhat? Out there. Yeah.
There's magic in this film.
It's a bit.
I'm kind of with Sean on that one.
it's out there, and it overshadows him. And perhaps Her Majesty's Secret Service would have been a better entry vehicle for him, in which he could really shine. I would have loved to see him in that rather than Live or Let Die, even though I do like George Lazenby.
I think I was watching this yesterday, and my daughter walked by, and she said, "Holy crap, does he look young?"
Older than Connery.
And I was thinking, you know, they had talked about casting him in 1962, a decade earlier, and I thought, if he looked young in 1973, imagine what he would have looked like in 1962. And I flashed back to an impression I had of a later Bond, Pierce Brosnan, almost exactly my same opinion. When they first talked about him as being Bond, I thought he looked like a kid.
Yeah.
And when he finally was cast, I thought he fit into the role. And I kind of thought the same thing here. He does look youthful, but he doesn't look immature. Mm-hmm. He looks, you know, as we've said, quite dashing in his clothes. And although I wouldn't say he's the most vigorous of Bonds, he sells the action that he's in well enough at this point. I think maybe it's a little harder to believe later on in the series. But when he grabs that fire escape and jumps up and kicks those guys, I could believe that. I was okay with that. And I just thought that he, as you've said, he exudes charm, and it's a different kind of charm. He's much more smooth and less rough-hewn than Connery was in the part. And I kind of see where Lazenby might have gone in some of the same kind of characters, but I don't think he had the skills to do it, and Roger Moore did, at least early on in the process. We have at least two shows to get to before we get to some of those more tragic Bond elements with Roger Moore. But I'm glad that Jay's opinion is a little bit more elevated now, even if he doesn't rise to the level of a top-tier Bond.
He might.
He gets some credit.
He might. I'm allowing the possibility. If we just look at these four, he's number one from these four films.
In these four. One of the things I learned was that they actually offered Dalton the role before Lazenby, but Dalton said to them, "I think I'm too young to play him."
Oh.
It's interesting because didn't they offer Brosnan the role before Dalton?
Yes.
And Brosnan couldn't get out of Remington Steele, so they went with Dalton. It's very interesting how the same dudes kind of circle around this role a whole bunch of times.
Well, and the guy who plays the real Hilary Bray in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, he was offered it for like Connery era and didn't get it then, apparently. So they just kept him on board to play this role later on.
It's really fascinating.
All right. Well, now
like
that we've
ten British guys back then, wasn't it? They just had like the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the same guys. They were
I think it's key because a lot of people, you know, the discussion of who should be Bond going forward, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like Bond needs to be British. I get that Lazenby was Australian, and it's not close. I don't think.
No.
Let's talk about some Bond issues that don't require you to be British, but apparently sometimes require you to be British. We have three of these films with Ernst Stavro Blofeld as the villain, played by three different actors, two of whom are English, and they're all very different. And there is no continuity between the films whatsoever. No attempt to pretend that there's continuity between the films whatsoever.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, as a child, I had no idea that they were the same character as a kid. At all. None. So,
it's just a common name.
Yes, it must be.
I think when you're, because I know, I thought when I was young, maybe the name Blofeld is simply a figurehead for Spectre, and then they'd shift new people into that role and give them the name to, like the Dread Pirate Roberts. It's the name. Yeah. You know what I mean? The name is carrying all the power, not necessarily the guy. But when you have to make those kind of contentions in your head, something's going wrong.
Especially as a child.
Yeah. I think Telly Savalas is the one that did it the best, and he's the most American of them.
I go Charles Gray is the best.
I think Tom Pleasance was the best.
Well, everybody seems to have a variety of opinions on this.
No one's saying Christoph Waltz. Excellent.
Well, that's for a later series.
We'll get
about
there. This time next week.
I thought Telly Savalas is definitely the most physically engaged and active of the characters. Yes. In the other two episodes, you know, Blofeld is a figurehead who is full of exposition, background talk, and has basically nothing to do. And in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, Telly Savalas, he gets on the skis. He uses a machine gun. He rides down the bobsled. He fights Bond hand to hand.
He's Bojack with a cat.
Yeah, this is a very engaged Blofeld, which may be a little bit different from what we got introduced to in Thunderball and From Russia with Love, but which feels a lot more like it's a character that we should be paying attention to rather than just somebody who's in the background providing exposition. And I really like Telly Savalas as the character. When I watched the film, you know, just the other day, this is a full-blown performance. Donald Pleasance is fine, but he comes off a little bit he's a little effete, and he's got that scar that's it's a cartoon image of the bad guy.
And that's what's funny is that now it's very much all you see is Dr. Evil when you see Pleasance's version.
Well, when you see You Only Live Twice, all you see is on Austin Powers film.
It was fun, but I'm laughing more at it than with it.
Right. I will say, is it Charles Gray in Diamonds Are Forever?
Yes.
Fine, but the problem with watching these particular four in a block, he definitely played the contact Henderson in You Only Live Twice.
Yes, he
so,
did.
I will accept reusing actors when I'm watching Xena and or Hercules because everyone shooting in New Zealand only has a dozen actors to choose from. I'll take it there. Not in a Bond movie. Somebody on set had to be like, oh, should we really use that guy? Because we just used him as something else. Or throw in a line about like, oh, yes, we used plastic surgery to make him look like your contact from four movies ago.
I think it's moot when you're talking about these types of movies. Because look at frickin' James Bond. He's changed, you know, he's changed bodies. He's regenerated six times now. And there's been no mention of why his appearance has changed yet. You know, they mentioned like his marriage, the fact that he was married, but he should also be 95 years old now as well. I just think we should just throw comedy out the door when we talk about these, because there's nothing, you just can't really take it seriously. I mean, if you try to put continuity in it, you will go mad. You will go crazy.
That's why the next villain should be Timothy Dalton.
Okay.
Be fantastic.
I love that idea. A great villain.
He is a hot fuzz. Yes. Come
he's
on.
Incredible hot fuzz.
So
Rocketeer.
I was pleasantly surprised to see Telly Savalas play Blofeld, and it was fun watching him, even though if you're told, oh, Telly Savalas playing Blofeld, you're like, how the hell's that going to happen? You know, he did much better than one would expect. Not that I'm a Kojak fan. I've never actually watched an episode of Kojak, and I've only seen...
You really should.
Columbo
yeah,
or GTFO.
At least
Russia.
Their sunglasses.
I know. But the thing about Donald Pleasance is his performance, and I realize that you guys just mentioned, you know, Dr. Evil is just a take on Donald Pleasance, and you can't help. But I watched this before Dr. Evil was ever a character, and just the whole his performance goes along with the whole HQ made out into a hollowed volcano where I don't know where the hell he's getting his money from, and he's got piranhas that chew the flesh off a boat in 3 seconds. You know, You've got the cat that, you know, I don't know how many scratches Donald Pleasance had to endure. You can see it in a couple scenes where the cat does not want to be held and is like clutching at his neck to get off.
That's maybe the first time he's ever held a cat in this film.
Maybe that would explain the scar.
We don't draw on our chickies. Yeah. No.
He's not doing a good job.
He read the script and was like, I know how to play this. Without talking to anyone or interacting with anyone else, he read the script and was like, I'm tailoring my performance to this story. And that's fine. It's a choice.
And I thought it was the most fun. I really do. It was extremely entertaining and enjoyable, and I couldn't stop laughing. It was ridiculous in all the right ways.
In one of his first scenes, he kills a woman by having her walk across a collapsible bridge into a river full of piranhas.
Oh, I don't remember that part. I did not remember that part at all. I could not stop laughing. My neighbors probably heard me. It was wonderful.
Definition of a villain.
Such a rickety bridge.
This is really happening. This is great.
It's poorly built wonderful. Bridge.
Yeah, it's wonderful. A bridge with no
side rails.
It's wonderful. It's hokey. It's so much more fun to watch than, say, James Bond in his dorky little helicopter earlier in the movie. I can't remember what they call it.
I appreciated
about this one too was a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of the panning shots. I mean, there was it felt a lot bigger scale than some of the other ones that we watched. Like Majesty's Secret Service, for instance. That one I felt like we lost so much on that. And that was one of the things that I thought was really enjoyable about You Only Live Twice was, I mean, they shot him out of a submarine at the beginning. I used to say, I mean, this one for me was by far the most fun of all the four movies we watched.
Go ahead.
Can I say something about this? When he's shot out of the submarine, they put him in there and they've got all these complicated lights going on, ready, you know, pausing. And in front of the tube, there's just a little manual sign that says, tube empty, tube filled. And the guy just pulls it up. It's almost like an open close. And yet they've got all this elaborate computers and stuff. And then I also thought, wait a minute, can they do that? Can they actually shoot a guy out of a submarine? Because that'd be kind of cool.
They can't. Because you have the shot of him, he's going to be shot out of a submarine. And so you expect to see the next shot, him being propelled through the water with some kind of force. No, it's just launch the submarine, next shot he's swimming.
Yep.
So all it is they've just put him in the water through a different door.
All right. Well, we've jumped ahead a little bit here. I'm going to intervene again and return to our momentary theme. I'm excited that everybody's enthusiastic about finding the next thing to talk about. We talked about Blofeld, who is in three of the films, but we do have a villain that is different in Live and Let Die.
Yes.
And we ought to spend a little bit of time talking about Yavik Kotto.
Okay.
Yavik Kotto is fantastic.
Names is for tombstones, baby.
Yes, he gets to do double duty as Mr. Big and Dr. Kananga.
Yeah. Mr. Big's in one scene, right?
Also has the most realistic plan of
the most
some
realistic
of the villains.
Death, most realistic death of all of these films.
death is
no, let's come back to the death. The death is a little ridiculous. If you have a pool full of sharks, that's how you die. You don't die. Anyway, the plan, his plot versus some of the other plot, especially the other three movies in this block, his plot is just, look, I'm going to sell all the heroin, but I'm giving it away for free. I'm going to give everybody's going to be addicted. I'm going to drive all the other dealers out of business. And then when I'm the only dealer, I'm going to raise all the prices and make all the money. That's a very realistic and accurate plot.
It's an interesting marketing scheme. It's a little bit like MoviePass. He's really hoping it's going to work before he goes broke.
It's
Goldfinger with drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very low-key. He's just got, you know, these are my plans. This is what I'm doing. He's also, I think, a dude who very much – the advantage of making Bond movies throughout the decades is you can look around and be like, hey, what's popular now? Let's reflect that.
Yes.
That is so clear to see with fucking Craig's first movie, which I'm going to – Casino Royale, is that his first one?
Yeah.
Because at the time, the Bourne movies were the thing, and then they're like, oh, well, we'll reflect that. We'll make Bond more Bourne. I don't want that in my Bond.
That's why we watch Bourne.
Exactly. This one is, oh, these blaxploitation movies are huge. Let's go ahead and make a Bond blaxploitation movie. And it's – It's amazing and awful and terrible, super entertaining. But Yaphet Kotto was someone who was like, yeah, I get this. I'm going to play all this exactly correctly.
Blow up.
I always expected a bit more from Yaphet Kotto. I'm a fan of his. I like him in films. And just when I see, like, oh, Yaphet Kotto's going to be a Bond villain, this is going to be good. And he's a little understated, which is, it's not bad. He's a great actor. It's just I want a bit more. It's a bit more flair from him, a bit more something.
You want him more over the top, but he's there to make his. He's there to make money.
Well,
you get a little bit of that at the final sequence when he's got Bond in solitaire, and he's a little bit more jovial, and he's kidding around. He's not so serious and dour playing this supposed UN diplomat, and he's just straight out the villain in that situation. But you're right. I mean, he is very subdued when he's got Teehee's hooks around Bond's fingers, and he's just calling off the numbers, and they don't cut off Bond's fingers, despite the fact that he
got it wrong.
It wrong over and over and over again.
He's surrounded by colourful characters, is why he's probably more confused. Yeah. So you've got Teehee, you've got Whisper, you've got Baron Samedi.
Baron Samedi is easily one of the best parts of any Bond movie. Yeah, so, is this where we see the example of your villain's only as good as their henchman? Well, you know, sometimes these movies are only as good as their villain, and then the villain is only as good as the henchman.
That's why Donald Pleasance's Blofeld not great, because he has a terrible henchman. Blonde guy who doesn't speak. All right.
Well, but, okay, anyway, I'm not thing.
Wait, did you just describe Sean?
Well, no, I never mind. I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna make a joke about it's sometimes good to have a blonde guy around who won't speak. But that's just.
Well, I didn't want to dwell too long on Bond and the villains, but it seems like we've done quite a bit of time on that. We have a variety of, sorry about the sexist reference, Bond girls that are going to be featured in these films. And let's be frank, there are two that are exceptional in this, and then there are several that are...
Less so.
Yeah.
So I'd be willing to listen to anybody talking about either of the exceptional Bond girls in this film, in these films first.
Are we on the same page with who's exceptional? Diane Rigg.
Absolutely.
I have to say, too, it took me about a half an hour before I went, wait a minute, that's Diana Rigg. What is wrong with me? It took me way too long to realize that's who I was. And I kept going, she's wonderful. She's wonderful.
She's fantastic.
Fine.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. He's fine. She's wonderful.
She elevates the movie. I think probably a smart move on their part to put someone with her expertise and correct sense for the movie. She had the right vibe. She had the right tone, as opposed to Lazenby, who was unproven, the best way to when he started. So I think they putting her as his counterpart was a good way to kind of balance out.
It was almost a natural choice because at this point she had been doing the Avengers for years and years, hadn't she?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, it made perfect sense. We had Honor Blackman transferring from the Avengers into a Bond film, and then we had Diana Rigg doing the same thing. I'm surprised that we didn't get don't we get Joanna Lumley in
she has a line.
Yes.
She
has a line or two.
Sweetie darling. Oh, yeah, sweetie.
Oh, it's true. Yes, that's right.
My only... I think Diana Rigg is fantastic. My only concern with her isn't about her at all. It's her introduction. Not at the start when... It's her introduction to the casino scene where Bond's playing... he's not playing Baccarat.
It is Baccarat.
No, it's a version of Baccarat. It's one where the individual players act as the bank. It's like Chasse-Faire or something. It's a French name.
Okay.
But it's the same rules as Baccarat, but an individual player is the bank. I don't know how to play either. I just have to be correct. I don't like... So Bond sat at the table playing, and she arrives at the scene cleavage first, and the camera just kind of rests on the cleavage for a couple of beats. before then moving up to a face. And it's
something wrong with that.
Well, it's very
to be fair, that's how all women are introduced in these movies. They're not, yeah, they're not characters, yes, they're tits and ass, and that's the way they're presented first.
It's a very fast and furious way of introducing a character. That's all. I agree that's how it happened a lot, but it's just I'd like it not to be the case.
No, I recognize them from the beach. It's not a good way to introduce a character, but it is typical of Bond. So it's this trade-off, and I think, Heather, maybe you can back me up on this. As a female Bond movie fan, and I would say as a female fan of action movies in the 80s, there's a lot of like, this is just how it is. You just kind of have to accept that, look, it's not what I want, but it is the way it is, and I'll accept it going forward.
That's exactly how, well, otherwise you literally won't be able to watch them.
Right.
Because you'll be infuriated by all of it regularly. You have to go, okay, this is wrong. It was the times we realized that's wrong. Now we're moving on from it.
Yeah.
So you watched them with my wife really as well. That's really the mindset you have to have. Yeah, my wife is far less understanding about these films than you guys are.
Well,
some of it too depends on, you know, if it's something that you're introduced to now too, whereas if you're familiar with it and that is something that you existed with as that was your normal. I mean, as a kid, nobody told you this is wrong. This is not how women should be represented at all. Nobody said that to you when you were, you know, 8 or 9 years old.
Cynthia Rothrock did, but she was the only one.
It sounds like watching Murder by Death as a kid and not realizing that it's not PC for a white man to play an Asian guy.
No,
gosh. Yeah, it's like
watching him twice as a kid and realizing the same thing.
Well, wait. Yeah. Well, I don't want to. Richard has a plan here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's our job to disrupt that plan. Come on.
Syllabus, I should say, is a syllabus.
I will say that the inherent sexism is part of the franchise, and you can either accept it as part of what it was when it started and then be annoyed when it continues through the eras where maybe it should shift away. How about that?
Yeah.
Well said.
I think that sometimes it gets a little out of control. I mean, him being a man whore and going and sleeping around and, you know, saying things. But there are times, I think Goldfinger is one where he says to the girl, you know, go away, man talk. And then he slaps her on the butt. That's kind of icky.
Well, Connery can't be in a scene with a woman without hitting her.
That's true.
And that's outside of films as well.
Realize that, and it does make us uncomfortable, is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also part of why Connery is one of my least favorite Bonds. It's so overt in his, the sexism and the racism. And I feel like a lot of that bleeds through from Connery himself. And it's just, I just don't, it's off-putting.
The same thing runs through my head when most of them are running through women anyway. And I just think over and over again, herpes, all the STDs. This is so gross. Yeah.
How is Bond not dead? Like, how is he not sexy. Dead?
Yeah, how is he not dead?
How has his dick not just fallen off?
Like, why are you touching that? You are literally committing suicide by sex. It is a bad plan. That's just
trolling with diseases.
Will Chamberlain and Gene Simmons aside, I'm sure that there are people out there who engage in such reckless behaviors without actually having their Johnson fall off.
One scene in a Bond movie where some woman says something and he's like, well, yeah, let's whatever, snazzy one-liner to go to bed, and he pulls out a condom. That's all I'm asking for. Just one scene where he's like, yes, to bed.
Or like the biggest needle you've ever seen in your life getting injected and go, this is my protection. Just something.
Yeah, well, he should be seeing Q and getting that special injection that was created by the quartermaster staff that killed all of the extreme
I think it's for the quartermaster staff.
I'm sure the staff refers to it as the Bond serum.
The next STD that is discovered or created or mutated should be called Bond.
All right. Well, our second Bond girl that I'm very enthusiastic about, but maybe we have a difference of opinion on this. Is
Rosie Jane Carver?
As Solitaire.
I thought you were going with Tiffany Case. Okay, fine. Okay.
No,
Jill St. John is pretty and she's, you know, kind of ditzy in the role that she's in, but I don't think that part works very well.
I think she's good until, like, the last couple of scenes.
Yeah, she starts as one thing and turns into something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
She has a lot of agency to start with and is, like,
yes,
quite a confident and, like, a decent character. But towards the end when she's, like, she's... The screw-up with the tape, that's Bond's fault. That's not her fault, that is Bond's fault. Because he does not explain it, I read that scene as, here, put this in over there, please, I can't do it now. He could have quite easily destroyed it or thrown it overboard or whatever. Anyway, so that's his fault. But when she's given a gun and she fires herself off of the bloody mining platform.
Nonsense.
And then at the end, she's...
Yeah, dancing, like, off of it, yes.
And at the end, when Wint and Kid... We have to talk more about Wint and Kid. When Wint and Kid show up and they're attacking Bond, and she's just, like, cowering and doing nothing. It's like, do something.
Yeah.
Anything. But before those scenes, I think she's really good. I liked her. But Solitaire is
yes. The reason I like Jane Seymour is definitely not because she's engaged in the action. She's definitely a passive, female character in the film. But
she's often referred to as an object or a thing several times.
Yes, she's a possession. On the other hand, she may be the most beautiful woman they had in the Bond films.
Oh, my God, yes.
And
again, I prefer Jill St. John.
And she is,
Was this her first movie?
Yes. Well,
she was very young.
It's her first movie. I don't know if she was in something else before, but this was definitely the first major role that she had. And, I just think she fits to a T a person in that situation and circumstance, which is, basically a slave to a maniacal character because of her powers. But I thought she played it pretty well, and
she's
doing
the best she can with what she's got.
Yes,
yep.
And I love the voiceover when she is reading the cards and Bond is traveling across the ocean. I think that kind of sets up that mystical element to the movie that we'll be talking about later. But I really like her as a Bond girl, and so that's the one I was referring to.
I will admit, for me, she was purely just a physical thing to stare at. I just wanted to pet her hair. I mean, I had to wipe the drool off of my chin. She is so beautiful. I mean, literally breathtaking.
The costumes,
and, oh, yes. Just absolutely magnificent. And, I mean, that's one of the things, we refer to them as Bond girls. And some of them are, most of them are so beautiful, and there's so many for her to stand out the way she did says a lot. But she played it just fine too, I think. But really, I mean, I'm going to be completely superficial and just say I just couldn't get past how beautiful she was every time she was on screen. Mm-hmm. In a complimentary way, absolutely.
And it may be revealing too much about myself to say, of course, I did see this when I was 15 years old.
Would you want to pet her hair too?
Yes, among other things.
Yeah. I was trying to keep it.
Yep, yes. Heather tried to get you an out.
On a level.
He didn't say what the hair was.
Oh, all right. Jeez. Oh,
yeah, that
right, that's the other film, The Collars and Cuffs reference.
Yeah. Woo!
All right, well... we've talked about Jill St. John a little. We talked about Jane Seymour. We've talked about Diana Rigg. How about the wonderful women in You Only Live Twice? We shouldn't neglect them.
What are their names?
Aki.
Aki is one.
Kissy Suzuki.
One who does all the driving. And Kissy is the one who's there at the end who helps get in and out of the volcano.
Okay.
She's the one who does all the rock climbing in a bikini.
Yeah.
Because that's what you wear when you rock.
And then when
right?
she goes back to get help, she comes back in a bikini, but with, like, a very thin poncho over the top. It's still not in, like, appropriate climbing gear.
I don't think that this subject is really the best for me, but they're very forgettable, I'm so sorry to say. Although her, you have to remember, who's the second one, the one on the end? I'm so sorry, I don't remember her name.
Kissy?
There's nothing that stands out for me for them like the others do,
They were
sidekicks. Yeah. Very two-dimensional, which is really, honestly, most of the women in these movies are one-dimensional, so
It's, and they're even more one-dimensional in this film, though.
Yeah, I don't think that's you. I think that they're designed to be forgettable. They're not supposed to be taking the attention away from Bond. I think that they're simply part of the set.
Yes, yes. Arm pieces.
Yep.
Chauffeurs.
Yep.
Bedtime.
I think of all of them, and you know, we can come back to this, but in discussing the women, yeah, of the very high sexist levels of some of the early Bond movies, You Only Live Twice is real high.
Very high.
The fact that the poster is the scene of them being bathed by the four women of Bond and Tanaka being just, that's the poster. What they wanted to sell this film on.
The overt sexism and racism for me was absolutely the worst. Both of them were the worst in You Only Live Twice.
Like, I agree.
I couldn't believe what I was actually watching.
Yeah.
I was laughing, but kind of uncomfortably. Yes. And then I was going, okay, well, this is what it is. So I guess I'm just going to keep laughing at him throwing a couch at this guy.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, I was getting caught up in all the fun, because this one was a lot of fun, but it was also just, I think the extremes in this one were far more than the other four or the other three that we saw.
Are you referring to, say, the scene where Bond's Japanese colleague brings him to the bathhouse, and like, I'm like, are they going to have an orgy? What's going on here? He's going to go in one pool.
They're just
going to
have a massage. That's all that happens, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
They had separate pools, so it wasn't gay at all. You can't say it.
And I think Bond's first line in the entire movie is, Chinese girls taste different from any other girls. Yes.
Why is that?
I'm like,
then compares them to food.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
Gross. Followed by her saying, well, I give you the best Peking duck.
Perhaps I'm not best duck.
Yeah, it's disturbing. It's gross. It's off-putting. And then the whole, like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and make you look like a Japanese man. That's,
But it doesn't work. He doesn't look different.
He looks exactly the same.
There's like
he
hunches over and squints his eyes, and he has a bad haircut.
They give him a different wig, and they put like fake eyelids over him for that scene where they're putting them on, then they never come back. And I'm glad they never come back, because
they even did it in the first place was because he kept showing up drunk, and they didn't want anyone to know that he was sleeping during some of the scenes. That was it.
That might be true.
Yeah.
does it go to the level of offensiveness of, say, the 1980s masterpiece Soul Man? No. Maybe not. He's not a white actor playing an Asian actor, a la some other movies that we've talked about that I won't bring up again.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a purpose. It's just done badly. It's like, this is so stupid. This is dumb.
Yeah.
Why don't you just make him dress up like a woman? That would put some white makeup on him.
They can sneak 100 ninja commandos onto the island and nobody notices, and they think they can't sneak Bond onto the island. They have to hide him as a Japanese. It was a plot device to make it a little bit more reflective of the culture, and I don't think it really does do that.
That also plays into that bit of, like, James Bond is supposed to be the best secret agent of all time, and yet everyone everywhere knows who he is and what he looks like.
Do you guys watch Archer? Because if you do, he introduces himself as the greatest spy in the world all the time, and I always think, yeah, well, you know, that's definitely 60s, 70s era Bond. But they follow through with that with Brosnan as well, so...
Yep. I don't know. It's confusing.
James Bond. I mean, Thomas Deckfield.
Go ahead.
That's your discussion of the Bond women.
Yes, I was going to bring it to an end, because now that we've objectified women, let's talk about the objects in the films, the gadgets.
Good segue.
Mm-hmm.
I heard some disparaging comments earlier about Little Nelly, and I want to defend her honor, although she's perfectly capable of defending it herself.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So a lot of the best Bond gadgets are the ones that you don't want to respect maybe their novel in that you've got I can't think of any in these movies off the top.
Radioactive Lint.
Okay, sure. Radioactive Lint. Like, that's kind of like, wow, I've never seen that before. But when they brought that little helicopter out and they put it together and he got in it and he's like taking off, I'm like, oh, hell no. That's going to fall apart as soon as you are 30 seconds in the air. Okay, that is not going to work.
It had
real.
Yet.
It's
that
real.
Was real.
And then he gets attacked by like five real helicopters that he kicks their ass with missiles flying all over the place. And I still felt like it was going to fall apart. And I don't know. There was something about the look of the thing. I just could. It looked, you know what? You know what? It looked like something that would be like a G.I. Joe toy or a He-Man toy for me when I was little. And it smacked of, I know that they didn't make a Little Nelly toy. They couldn't have. Maybe they did. I don't know. But
if they did, I would have had it.
Okay, well, it didn't impress me as much as, say, the cars in the earlier films. Were there any other gadgets in these movies? I can't remember.
I watched Red Darts and You Only Live Twice. I want those.
What?
Nobody would. The cigarette darts. The darts that you shot and exploded. I'm smoking. No, I'm not.
Yeah, these films, smoking is a good thing. Like, cigarettes and cigars save the world a few times.
Wait, cigarettes literally kill. It's cool.
The watch in Live and Let Die that kind of does everything. It's got the magnet, it's got the saw, it's got the... Yeah.
I kind of like the oversized safecracker photocopier that has to be delivered by the construction equipment to the office because he couldn't be able to smuggle it in Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah, I think back in, like, in 1969, a photocopier was a gadget, apparently.
It is, yeah.
That was my favorite one.
I also like, You Only Live Twice, he pulls out a safecracker from his suit pocket, where it's just like, oh yeah, I happen to have my safecracker right here, where it's all big and chunky, but he had it in his coat.
And the espresso machine?
Does it do anything else?
I love the disdain that M gives it, just this out of disgust of this thing that Bond has in his kitchen.
Well, it's interesting that they highlight the digital watch at the beginning, because you've got a digital display on the watch, and that was something that you did not see in 1973, and it was early. Nothing fancy about it. It doesn't do anything. But that's why he has to switch watches and get the magnetized watch out.
Most of the tie-ins with these are the cars. Usually whatever Aston Martin is in the future becomes like the tie-in. And then the watches and the suits, I feel like, are often what I see now commercial-wise tied in. And I feel like these keep up with that.
What was the device that killed Yaffet Kotto?
The compressed air gun.
Compressed air gun.
And that's exactly what would happen if you swallowed a compressed air pellet. You inflate like a balloon and explode.
Rise up to the ceiling.
Yes, I hope it's full of helium.
I really hope so.
It's full of compressed helium.
The demonstration with the couch first, so that you understand how it works and what happens.
Okay, that's right. That so would actually work, though. That might, because it seems to be an inflatable sofa. So that would work.
Still have an issue with the fact that they introduce a pool full of sharks and then nothing happens with the pool full of sharks.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And if it had many snakes, many alligators and crocodiles, you don't need to add a third exotic killing machine. It's a menagerie in this goddamn film.
We already had a guy drop into a coffin and get eaten. Not eaten.
Oh, he was
bitten by snakes,
His reaction to it, though, was just amazing. He looked like he actually had put his hand into an electric socket instead.
That's why you hire Jeffrey Holder for things. When you have a man with that level of background of dance experience, then get fantastic snake bite scenes.
Yeah. Yep, it was outstanding.
Were there other gadgets that anybody wanted to talk about? I will refer my discussion of Little Nelly to the exploding helicopter episode that I was on recently, where we spent an hour talking about that.
I don't think the speedboat in Live and Let Die counts as a gadget, but that speedboat chase is... Well, maybe the
long.
Action set that, piece. We can come back to it. Do you have an action set piece category?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Let's jump ahead to that, the set pieces, the action set pieces. And since you started with the boat chase in Live and Let Die, let's go there.
Super entertaining, way too long.
Yes.
Really?
Way too long.
It was my I loved it. It was my favorite part of the whole movie. I was
very entertaining.
I thought it was freaking wonderful. And I loved that Roger Moore the whole time was like, I'm fine. I'm just out of cruising. Yeah.
I'm very nonchalantly driving.
My hair is barely out of place. Hey, I'll pick up a woman along the way here and I'll get to you later. It's fine. No, I loved it.
What's that? The boat's broken. Another one, please.
Well, I like it when the boats go flying in the air over the police lines.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun. That was
probably out of the four films. Like, no, wait, there's the Louvre scene that we touched on briefly on Her Majesty. But I think I'm going to go with Her Majesty as far as action set pieces with Live and Let Die a close second with the with the speedboats. Although I haven't seen that scene in a while, I should watch it again.
The double-decker bus was pretty good in that, too.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
It breaks, it decapitates
on a bridge, and it drops the top half on a cop car.
The 360 slide is pretty impressive in a double-decker bus.
Bus.
Yes, it is.
I can't do that in a car. That's the thing.
Much to J.W. Pepper's disgust.
Yes.
That's on the topic of Pepper. I don't have brought him up beforehand. But Live and Let Die, it has a problem where it kind of introduces every African American character it introduces either gets killed shortly after or is a villain. So it's kind of racist in that way. But I do like that they then go, okay, well, white people aren't great either. See, there's this guy. So they I like that they kind of deal with it themselves. So.
I can say that, from Dr. No all the way to Spectre, you've got villains of every single ethnicity. You got to have some black villains eventually. I mean, they're absolutely all covered in the series, you know. But what the problem is, if you're going to talk about racism, is that the motivation of the villain is to not dominate the world through science and ingenuity, but to get, you know, take up the corner of a drug cartel. Yeah. That might be a little
all the money.
Yeah. And also, Mr. Big isn't exactly a scion of African American.
You definitely got all those 70s blaxploitation references in.
Yeah. There. And that's, you know what, it's when you look at it that way, it's a little bit different. Like it's going
mobile.
With it's sticking it in it.
Yeah, no, it fits the era. Live and Let Die came out in 73 and Shaft came out in 71, Superfly came out in 72, Foxy Brown was out in 74. That was the heyday. So you have to, I mean, the sheer amount of black actors in that movie is astounding for a mainly white mainstream movie of the time, so you do have to give it that.
We'll wait for episode 3 of this franchise discussion to talk about the Kung Fu.
That's a whole separate thing. But the introduction of, like, wait, what are we doing? Oh, action set. I was like, let me not get ahead if we're trying to begin.
I'm sorry, I did, you know, steer us off the syllabus again.
I'm trying to think.
Sorry,
I like the speedboat chase. It's too long, but it's Moore's charm while doing it, I think, is fantastic. I think also in terms of, maybe not action set pieces, but a set piece in that one, the alligator farm. That is easily one of the most memorable James Bond
scenes. What a great escape.
And it was because
and crocodiles, which I was really upset about because, as far as I know, the only place that alligators and crocodiles live together cohesively is in the Everglades in Florida. So there was a big plot hole there, and I'm very upset about it.
But it's a farm, right? He says they're not out in the swamp. This is a place where – and what I love is that was a real farm and was owned by a man named Kanigo, which is where they got the name.
And
really?
Real,
oh, wow.
Yes. That was real crocodiles and alligators a stuntman was running across.
Real stunt. So.
That was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, plus, it's the Teehee's interaction and bringing him out there and be like throwing that chicken with the world's most fake hook hand, which I love.
Yeah. It's just like, got a whole extra joint on it.
And he's just giggling the whole time as he backs away and leaves Bond out there. And again, more looking around like, okay, well, I'm out here surrounded by these alligators. I'm not going to get upset. I got this under control.
I
no
got a magnet
problem.
Watch. I'll bring that boat over. All right, it's tied on. How dare it?
I
once
love,
again, without mussing his hair or getting his suit dirty,
no.
He gets out of the scene.
That's right. He is under control. It's super entertaining.
Can we talk about the action in Diamonds Are Forever? Specifically...
Wait, is it, you mean the three-wheeled motorcycle chase?
No, I mean the Blues Brothers segment that gets spliced into with the cars chasing around.
Oh, the cars,
Vegas.
Yes.
And then the two-wheeling down the alleyway, which miraculously switches direction halfway down, so the car comes out the other direction. But the fact that in the film, they acknowledge they've done this, and there is a shot that goes from Jill St. John, top left, and a camera kind of swings down as though the car is flipping over somehow, and then comes out the other direction. The audacity of, of realizing, oh shit, we've got a mistake in our film. Let's just defy physics with an insert shot. Let's do it. Let's go. I'd love that they just took the time to just not just have a mistake, but to try and fix it in just the worst, most ridiculous manner.
Yeah, that movie.
I love Diamonds Are Forever. It's my favorite of these four films. I had the most fun with it.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Yes, absolutely. But
so
for me, it was the most
fun.
That's
the one with the Bambi and Thumper fight, right?
Yes, I hate that so much. I hate that.
I didn't like that.
I hate it every time. He walks in there and he just gets his ass kicked while they're doing gymnastics for no freaking apparent reason at all.
They're gymnasts. What else are they supposed to do?
I hate that scene.
It's not good.
No, that scene's not good.
I'll kick them into the pool. That's where we'll go.
And they're not good acting wise either.
No,
they're bad.
Tremendously bad. And they're supposedly like they're the fembots of this particular movie for me. And just I would rather have them shoot the guns out of their brassieres personally.
Well, I've got to say, I hate the cold. I do not like the idea of being in snow whatsoever. I have no desire whatsoever to ever go skiing.
Oh, it's so much fun.
But I could watch a James Bond movie where he skis over and over again after watching
and
Honor
so
Majesty's
many.
Secret Service.
He does it in every other movie.
It's fantastically choreographed with the music. I love the scene where the guy misses the ditch and ends up in front of the snowplow.
The Fargo ditch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
You have to go.
Yes. But to me, those wide shots where they're going down the mountain and they're being chased with guys with machine guns, that just is cool looking. It just
it's
looks so
shot.
Smooth
yeah,
and
beautifully shot.
Beautiful, and I, oh my gosh, like I said, I hate the cold. I don't ever want to be any place like that, you know, but I'm happy to watch it.
Skiing is a lot of fun, Richard.
I actually agree.
Skiing, the one-footed skiing,
he's invented, he invents snowboarding. Yeah, right there.
And involuntary.
I agree wholeheartedly, but as a man who is constantly sweating, I have to say that I enjoy the cold immensely. So, but that is the best act, some of the best action sequences, I think, the best action sequence in this this entire quadrology. Quadrology? Quadrilogy.
Yeah.
Say that.
Quartet. Yeah. Quartet. There you go. Yeah.
It's just all the action in On the Majesty's Secret Service is all clumped together at the end. That's why you have to get to like an hour and 20 minutes of relatively boring film together.
Oh, poo-poo baby.
It is really good once you get to it, though. I think I absolutely enjoyed it. And, I mean, who doesn't enjoy machine guns getting shot while you're going down something potentially dangerous already, like skiing?
Really fast.
I do prefer my action set pieces spread out over the course of a movie rather than clumped together at the end. But you know.
Me too.
I like the idea of sliding on your belly with a machine gun.
Oh, yeah.
I want to do it.
I don't want to do it, but I like watching it.
I'll do it.
I just know exactly how cold and how uncomfortable that's going to be.
I live in Michigan. I'm used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you do know.
Yeah.
We have
no
fun
out
there. Yeah. It could snow tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't surprise me either.
No.
Can we talk about the villains?
Sure.
Is that the next item? I don't know.
I thought we did talk. Oh, secondary villains.
Secondary villains.
That would be perfectly fine. Secondary characters and villains, yes.
My favorite ones of all time are in this, and I'm talking about Mr. Wint and Mr. Kid.
Yeah,
they are so cool. Like, cool baby. Like,
wait, what?
they're very much the, would you say, late 60s, early 70s, stereotypical, like,
early 70s.
Yeah, kind of hip cat just on the edge of being hippies into...
Yeah, and they're gay, and that's kind of fun, and it's only like sort of mentioned twice, it's implied. And the one guy is Crispin Glover's dad.
Yeah, it's Bruce Glover.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell. It's
oh,
he looks like him. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
You know, isn't it funny, Mr. Kid, how everyone who's around those diamonds seems to die? Yes, it is, Mr. Wynn. I just love the way they talk. And boy, do they get it good at the end.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way they interact with one another is super entertaining as well.
I've listened to Putter Smith was on a podcast, the I Was There Too podcast. It talked to people who were on other supporting roles in films, hosted by Matt Gourley, who is one of my favorite podcasters. And one of the things he talked about was how when he showed up, Putter Smith wasn't really an actor before this film. He's only been in a few things, whereas Bruce Glover has been an actor for a long time. And when they were talking about it, Bruce Glover just tried to steal all of his lines. Putter Smith was like, I'm a bit nervous. He's the bald guy with the longer hair and the moustache. He's like, I'm a bit nervous. Can you give me a hand with this? And Bruce Glover was like, yeah, I'll give you a hand. How about I say this bit and this bit and this. I'll just say it all. It's fine. So they didn't like each other. They didn't get on well at all in the filming. But I loved them. They're some of my favorite henchmen as well.
So memorable. That's the thing that makes a difference. When you have a series that has this many movies in it, the fact that you can immediately say a name and think of who they are and what they did makes them incredibly memorable, and that's a way a henchman can stand out in these movies.
And creative deaths. Like a scorpion down the back. There's so many easier ways of doing it. And putting Bond in a coffin and cremating him instead of just, I don't know, shooting him. It's just,
they
could have done that several times, and they don't. And that, of course, is another one of those.
We're not judging them on their effectiveness.
No.
We're judging them on
theatricality. I like some creativity in my hedge people.
And then we have Rosa Klebb version 2 in Honor Majesty. She is okay, I guess. She's not given very much to do other than herd the women around. Mm-hmm. Although she's pretty nasty in that car chase sequence down there in the Christmas village.
And let's not forget, she's the one using the gun who kills...
That's right!
Well, spoiler free. Yeah, like that matters.
I think
Mrs. Bond
has
not come back for the remaining
straight
series.
Straight up murders Bond's wife, and then the question has to be Bond's wife? Yeah. She's... as memorable as you can get in that movie, to be honest.
I agree.
I don't know that there's many in You Only Live Twice, because I think that Tiger Tanaka becomes kind of the most memorable character, and he's a good guy.
But you have Hans.
Osada,
the blonde man.
The tall blonde.
See, I forgot about him already.
He fights Bond for about 30 seconds before he's pushed into the thing.
They have that fight where Bond's opening gambit is to walk into his fist. Walks into the room, keeps going, punch in the face.
There is a henchman though that is in the film but mysteriously disappears at one point, and I'm referring, of course, to the cat.
I think the cat was a hostage. Looking by its facial expressions.
To see the cat step it up and, like, really prove its medal as one of the world's best villains. I'd love to see the cat a little more trained, a little more. I think after seeing some of the dog action in the most recent John Wick, can we get him a little more cat action from Blofeld?
The cats something to do.
Don't want to, though. They're too indifferent to our human commands.
No, that's, yeah, that's just
they're already the running things.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like the fact, though, that when he steps down and the cat jumps up into Blofeld's arms, supposedly giving away the real Blofeld, and of course we discover that there are two cats. That's a fun moment.
Wrong.
Yeah.
I will say, along the lines of Winton Kidd, I think the other most memorable henchmen, especially in these movies, are Teehee and Whisper in Baron Samedi. I can we talk about Jeffrey Holder and how awesome he is? And
he
I could have used
yes.
more of that- him.
Is that the guy that did 7-Up commercials
yes.
at one
yeah,
point?
Yeah, the 7-Up okay. guy.
Right. These are cool limits. These are uncool limits.
Oh, man. Oh, Mr. Pye just turned the tile back in the Wayback Machine there. I forgot all about that.
There's a, well, YouTube, there's a YouTube series so... called No Small Parts, which did a whole episode all about Jeffrey Holder. I'd recommend
it. And is it Boomerang? Yeah, he's fantastic in Boomerang as well. The Eddie Murphy?
Yes. No,
it's, all right, fine.
I haven't seen it. So.
Everyone?
I've seen it.
It's been a while.
I've seen it.
I didn't.
He has a small part in that in which he just, it seems like maybe is just not acting, just kind of showed up and got to do what he wanted, and he is fantastic. He was a big-time kind of Broadway dancer and actor and just owns the hell out of his scenes as Baron Samedi. And also kind of set the tone for Baron Samedi. That's a voodoo character who shows up in, you know, their different texts and histories and stories. And you see Baron Samedi show up in a lot of other stories and movies and TV shows. He was just on Cloak and Dagger last week. Yes, I did find a way to work Cloak and Dagger into this discussion.
I was going to say, we've been talking for 90 minutes. You haven't brought it up yet.
Listen, I'm going to wait to get to the Baron Samedi discussion. But yeah, I think that anytime you see Baron Samedi at this point, I always compare him to Jeffrey Holder's performance. Like, he set the bar in terms of what that character could be and how they could interact. And so I love him. He's my favorite.
And he's still alive.
He's sitting on the front of the train at the end for no reason.
He can't be killed.
Which I love. He was killed 3 or 4 times, wasn't he? Like, he shot in the head.
But he turned into a ceramic mannequin. He turned into George Lazenby. And
sure.
Then he gets thrown into this. Yeah, he's. They say he's the man who can't be killed. So I would like a Baron Samedi spinoff, please.
Or just for him to
Go. I forgot about villain.
I forgot about Mumbles, and I remember now the first time Whisper. Mumbles is somebody from a different.
Dick Tracy.
That's Dick Tracy.
Dustin Hoffman from Dick Tracy.
Big one did it.
Oh my God! Who did that?
Heather.
Okay, that was terrifying. Could you never do that again? Oh. That was sounded like the Tiki doll from Trilogy of Terror.
Yikes.
And I'm I liked Whisper. He's going, "What'd you say?" What? I don't know. It's like, we need a villain with a characteristic. We need a villain with a characteristic. What will we give him? I think they're like, he needs to be rehabilitated at the end. We're not going to kill him off. And he doesn't get killed, I believe, does he?
He just disappears into the...
Yeah, he just sort of like,
Bond kind of fights him off because he can't alert anyone because he can only whisper. I like that it's relevant. Like, hench people always get taken out by their deformities or their kind of like when he takes out Teehee by locking his claw over the fence. So that's like takes
he disarms
out,
him.
Yeah, that's how he takes out Jaws in a future film, and or jump at the hat. So he's just he uses their strength against them. Steven Seagal.
Yeah, good call. I do. I also love Teehee. I think that's a dude having a good time, and I really appreciate his. I'm trying to get the actor's name now, so again, Julius Harris.
I believe he will be making an appearance in the Shaft. Look back. I seem to recall that he's in Shaft.
Score.
Yes.
Oh, someone's been going through all their Shaft movies.
Oh, he's in Technicolor 1, 2, 3. I didn't really watch that. The 76 version of King Kong?
He's a police captain.
Yeah, he's in the 70s version of King Kong. I don't need to rewatch that. Seen that one. No, we covered that one.
He's in Harley Davidson and the Marble Man. Yeah, he's great. I really feel like he just looks like he's having fun all the time. And I get that his name is Teehee, so yes, he's laughing. But on top of that, just looks like he's having fun.
Look, they have a guy who's always laughing, but isn't Jeffrey Holder with that wonderful laugh.
Yes. Yeah, how Jeffrey Holder didn't get Teehee. And they were like, well, we need a guy who could fall into a bin of snakes and then, you know, look like he's getting bitten. And he was like, oh, yeah, I got that.
me, please.
He's got a great smile, too.
Yeah.
Well, and also nice and from Trinidad originally, so, you know, he can play someone from a fictional Caribbean island nation.
Caribbean island, yes. Well, let's move from the secondary characters to something that I think we may have neglected on the earlier episode, and I have to go back and listen to it, but it's always been a big feature in the Bond films, the production design of the films, and I like so many elements in all of these films, even Diamonds Are Forever, that I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about some of those things.
Well, I think doesn't begin and end with that volcano lair?
There you go.
Yeah.
Hank Scorpio's
lair. We have to start
lair.
There, and we almost certainly will finish there. I mean, it becomes so iconically ridiculous that the secret lair is in a volcano, and it looks like it could almost work.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, it's absolutely plausible. Don't you have a volcano lair? I mean, I learned how to make one from that movie.
If I did, I wouldn't tell you.
What was the giant vat of bicarbonate soda?
Lair, you know, to get to the bomb shelter, you have to go through the fish pond.
I love it. It's a huge set, and it just really holds up. It looks fantastic.
The set costs the same as the first film. Seriously, that's how much it costs.
Well, I feel like we got more of that kind of stuff from You Only Live Twice anyway. There felt like it was definitely bigger in general. The set pieces were huge. The action sequences, and they were shot that way too. The rooftop chase scene, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at all these guys. This is actually pretty good. And you did go to in the planes and things like that where obviously they weren't in the plane, but all the other shots and jumping out of them, et cetera, were actually done pretty well in that movie. I was relatively impressed. I was expecting way more cartoonish and more just, it's Bond and they'll buy it anyway. We'll go
or
along and be a little
terrible
ridiculous.
Special effects like Diamonds Are Forever. I mean, it immediately made you wish for the practical big time effects of You Only Live Twice when you're watching Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah,
terrible
absolutely.
Animation of laser shots.
The ending of that movie is horrible. It you can actually see them run out of money.
Oh yeah. Well, it's because it's all in Sean Connery's pockets.
Yeah.
In order to get him to be in the movie, they had to give him all the money. I wrote it
which
down.
Which he then turned around and gave to like the Scottish National Party.
Yeah, gives it to some sort of Scottish Education Fund, which great, but also now look at the effects in your final sequence.
I don't think he cared.
No,
I don't think anybody
we're just
cared.
Leave Blofeld hanging in a bath of scow.
Yeah,
you know, no exploding death, no melting,
no face-offs.
He's just going to hang there and hope that everybody notices that everything exploded.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are the things that you kind of expect and hope for when you watch movies.
On the other hand, Willard White's penthouse is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Well, is it the only Bond movie so far to go to Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Willard White is played by the sausage guy.
Jimmy Dean.
There you go. Jimmy Dean.
Sausage guy.
Sausage guy.
Yeah.
I recognize the name Jimmy Dean, but who is that?
Oh, sausages. He makes breakfast sausages.
He was a country singer who, you know, also owned a meat processing
a
manufacturing
firm, okay.
business.
Yeah.
Jimmy Dean sausage. It's still there. You can still get Jimmy Dean sausage.
He's the sausage king of Nevada. Okay.
Hey, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you have a chain of restaurants as well.
He's the Matthew Broderick of 1971.
If you like breakfast sausage, he's your guy.
Okay.
Right. Well, I guess
that's
taken
an interesting turn.
The death of that side. Just
it was,
this podcast
okay.
has been brought to you by Jimmy Dean Sausages.
The depth of the side comes from the phrase breakfast sausage, which is not a sausage. It's not sausage. That's a burger. That is a burger.
It's a
burger. If it's in a patty, if it's in a
patty,
it's not a sausage. It's a burger.
Well, your sausages are hot dogs. Or bratwursts.
Okay, my sausages really are not bratwursts because I'm not German.
Nope. Sausages because I'll bring pancakes.
In Milwaukee, all we have is bratwurst, so...
My sausages are flapjacks. that's a joke for somebody else.
how about the laboratory and the peak at the top of the mountain in Her Majesty's Secret Service? That was a real... restaurant that they used for the film, but I, you know, the interiors, of course, are all different, and I like the purple lights in the laboratory indicating the, you know, the what would you call it, the desanitizing or the sanitizing light that's supposed to be going there, and it makes everything look kind of dark and 1960-ish. You know, I was expecting black light posters in the background.
Oh man, I wish they had been.
And I like that they used some of the horrendous decor in the fight, like when Tracy stabs the guy in the back with those wall spikes. What the hell are they doing? What are they for? And one of the henchmen makes her drop the gun she's got with that that lump of quartz on the side, that very kitschy thing. So yeah, I approved that they made use of them. How terrible they looked and how little I want them in my house regardless. But...
I think the isolated lab on top of a mountain is equally as much of a trope as the secret lair inside of a volcano. So I think it's well done. It looks great. The exterior shots are beautiful.
Indeed.
Oh, really. I thought that was a question. I'm sorry.
Nope, period. Sorry.
Period. End of that discussion.
End of sentence.
And then the... the whole motif in Live and Let Die with the voodoo and the tarot cards, I think is really cool. I always wondered because it's very obvious on the, you know, we have a deck of those tarot cards that we bought online just because I love the design so much. It's very obvious on the back of the cards that it's a 007 design. When I was watching it play in the, you know, on the TV last night, I said, yep, it just says, it comes right out and says 007 on the back of the cards as Solitaire stealing them out. There is nothing subtle about that at all.
Nope.
That's kind of cool, actually.
So did Bond buy a whole set of just the lover's cards, or does does he have 52 sets of the entire card decks?
He bought all the sets and put them in there together.
Because that's my taxes going to pay for those. So I want to know what you're wasting money on.
This was before you were paying taxes, so I don't think
that's my grandparents' taxes paying for that.
Well, here we'll be paying for it forever.
Yeah, he basically cons her into bed by doing that.
Yeah.
Which...
Stick, move. Seriously, of all of the misogyny of like Bond's antics, that is a con.
I don't think "dick move" would be a really good way to describe that because
that's a pseudonym he goes by in some hotels. I think
a little too on the nose or on the
All right.
All right. Well, we almost started with this. Sean got going on it. I cut him off on the discussion, but I think we should talk about the title themes in the films because I think you've got some interesting ones here. And I'm going to start by suggesting something that's almost blasphemous.
We'll sing them.
that would be tragically awful. I was frustrated for years and years that there wasn't a title theme for Honor Majesty's Secret Service. You know, that we've got the Louis Armstrong song in it that is, I think, nicely placed and, you know, as Ebert would refer to it, the semi-obligatory musical interlude. But I kind of resented the notion that there wasn't a title theme for Honor Majesty's Secret Service until, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, and I watched the film and I went, this theme, this music is awesome. That is a fantastic piece of music that they mm-hmm. use, with the, like Sean was talking about, with the backgrounds, you know, the transparencies of the previous films playing in the background at one point. It was, as a theme that keeps coming up during the film also, I thought it worked really well. And I really liked that so much more than I did when I was a kid.
Yeah, I think you're so used to the, again, what I love about these is the formula, that it's a little tough to not have the song where it should be until, as you said, you can come back and appreciate it for what it is. I always assume the Bond song for this movie is that Louis Armstrong song, which is good, but it's over this out of nowhere mystical love montage. But yeah, of these four, and You Only Live Twice is easily one of my all-time favorites.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Nancy Sinatra, yes. And that song is just almost flawless.
It's an earworm, by the way.
That's a one that, and again, done in the Robbie Williams Millennium song, which kind of brought it back and gave it an upgraded pop feel. Shirley Bassey, always fantastic. The Diamonds Are Forever. It's a great song. It better than the movie.
Yes,
great.
Live and Let Die is one of the best ones too. I mean, you got three out of the four here are great.
Live and Let Die.
Woke up today singing Live and Let Die. It was the first thing that popped into my head. Mm. Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not way to start today.
Live and Let Die is great, apart from the little reggae, like sojourn in the middle. I don't like that bit. I don't know what it feels out of place. I love the rest of it, but also. I really like it when the film starts and you get the theme tune over the credits. It's great. And I just kind of wish that they'd have picked, I don't know, some other song to play at least once during the film, because it's every time any kind of action starts, it just starts playing again. It's too many times.
It's one that when it comes on, you can sing along with it really loudly and feel pretty good about your skill.
Yeah. I first of all, I agree with everything that Richard said, but I misspoke when I think somebody said about You Only Live Twice being great, obviously the best. No, I said, oh, yeah, I agree. I was getting it mixed up with
Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die. Live and Love Die is the best out of the four, without a doubt. Yeah. I can't stand You Only Live Twice, the theme.
Oh,
and really? I think, okay,
Sean,
this is what it reminds
me. Thank you.
Okay, wait, now.
No, I'm agreeing with yourselves. You. Thank you.
It's because there's something about, there's a music, there's an instrument or something that they're using in there that reminds me very much of on the Brady Bunch whenever they do something bad and they play this chord. Do you know what I'm talking about? I don't know what the hell the chord is. It's a musical instrument that's never used anymore, but it's just,
you know. So you have some PTSD with the song.
What?
So you had some PTSD with the song. No, it's bad.
Yeah, there you go. PTSD from when, you know, Marcia would get in trouble or something.
I don't have that connection. I just find it kind of a bit insipid. I like the bombast of Live and Let Die.
Is it because of Robbie Williams, though?
Robbie Williams. He's
thank God.
Genuinely one of my favorite musical artists.
Oh, my God! I am very much one of few in this country who's a big fan.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, great. Okay. I've been ridiculed for having this opinion. It's not common in the UK. He's inexplicably popular to many people, but I'm a fan.
When I went, one of my first trips to London, the first thing I bought was a Robbie Williams calendar because I couldn't get it here.
Okay, I'm not going to go that far. But
Jay, do you have Bailey Robbie calendar? Williams calendar up right now?
I don't have a calendar. So. I'm a millennial, damn it.
You guys don't do calendars right anyway. I had a Doctor Who calendar.
Yeah, they're all screwed up. Office.
Yeah, the start on the wrong day of the week. It's Saturday. Yeah, it's just, yeah. Anyway. But it was very polite about not being right.
But we know what a sausage is, goddammit. So.
The songs. That's what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
what's next, Richard?
Suddenly got very divided in this room.
Actually, that brings me to the end of the things that I had listed to talk about, but I did want to open it up for anything else that people thought would be worth covering, something that we neglected and really stands out about the films, or something that is atrocious and that needs to be focused on.
I want to discuss Moneypenny. Lois Maxwell, fantastic. Yes. And M. Lois Maxwell and Bernard Lee are both fantastic in all these films, and Q, but less or so. Particularly in On Majesty's Secret Service, Moneypenny is heartbreaking. The wedding at the end, it's just, the acting, she's got the expression on her face, it's just, you really feel for her. But then, just a couple of years later in Diamonds Are Forever, she's being incredibly unsympathetic and asking this guy whose wife just died whether he will propose to her.
Yeah.
Just, that seems like a little, I don't know, that she shouldn't be doing that.
It's one of those continuity things again.
Yeah.
But like, if Glowford has thought it's done, then we have to acknowledge the previous anyway.
Yeah.
But no, I think Lois Maxwell is fantastic throughout, and Bernard Lee as well. Just, Bernard Lee is always angry, but I like it.
I do have a note here just on how good Lois Maxwell is, and consistent, good, always knows the right tone, regardless of if she's in the office or in a submarine. She really has everything on point.
I'll agree. I thought it was fun that she helps hide the Italian agent from M when they drop in on Bond at his flat, which I think is only the second time that we see Bond at home in these films. We saw in the first film very briefly. What's the character's name? Eunice Gray is the actress who shows up in his shirt playing golf in his apartment. And then we come back to a much more 70s-style apartment in Live and Let Die, which has that fantastic coffee maker that apparently that's all it does is make coffee. But I like that Moneypenny, you know, is kind of in on the joke there.
Yes, Sylvia Trench was the name of Eunice Gay.
Sylvia Trench, thank you. I knew it was there. It would have gotten there eventually. Name. Yes.
Not the worst.
Single entendre.
Well, anything else about the four films, or should we do our ratings?
I liked Connery. Connery took a lot of shit in this episode. In his podcast, but there are a couple of moments where he was good, like where he has like genuine glee on his face, like when he realizes he can control the crane that Blofeld is in at the end of Diamonds Are Forever. Like there's this moment on his face, is like, oh, this is gonna be fun, and that's like Connery being like, okay, I'm here today. This is an enjoyable part I can do. I can play around with this crane. Yeah, we can swing around.
I'm sober and I'm on board.
So I liked that, and then in Diamonds Are Forever, when he puts on a weird accent of somebody who's not English, and he's like, I speak English, who is your flaw?
You are English!
That elevator flight, elevator fight is quite fun.
I speak English.
Well. Yeah, yes. Just that whole fight going on is good.
Also, Diamonds Are Forever, Plenty O'Toole, just no.
Oh, yeah.
Why is she in it?
They have to kill someone.
Of course it is.
Yes. He's at that point, even Bond is bored by the Bond girls.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody had the name and they just created a character to be able to use the name.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Because there's a joke there and you've got to make it.
You don't have to.
It was well done. It was on the nose, but it was well done.
It was on brand.
It's on a Christmas Jones kind of a level in terms of making a joke out of it. We'll get there. Someday.
He's attempting re-entry. Yes. That's the worst one for me. I'm sorry, that's not...
Yeah, Jermaine Clement.
He's a block of.
All right, overly franchise look back number three.
Yeah.
All right, well, anything else that people can think of that we've missed that you wanted to focus on? Well, then let's go ahead and do our LAM ratings for these. And this one we will do in the order of the film. So we'll start with You Only Live Twice. Heather, what did you think of You Only Live Twice? What's your rating?
This one, while was certainly the worst as far as sexism and racism went, I thought, was probably the most fun of all four of them. I gave it a 3.5 because I would watch it again just for the sheer audacity of the volcano fort hiding lair place in Dr. Evil that I didn't know was Dr. Evil.
Well, at the time, you didn't.
There you go.
Well, no, I didn't, and I hadn't watched it in so long that I literally slapped my head. It was beautiful.
All right, and Jeanette, how about you?
Yeah, I'll give it a 2, maybe a 2.5 on account of ninjas. Yeah, ninjas, and I'm happy.
Well, I would think ninjas would add at least one lamb to that. Sean, what did you think?
This is my least favorite of the four. I think it's obviously very well done production design wise, but it's boring at times. In that sequence where he becomes Japanese, there's not a lot that happens there. And by the end, once we have the attack on the volcano base, it's just a lot of guys running around. It seems like there's too many wide shots, too many big open spaces. It's not Mel Gibson directing these action sequences. So for me, it's a 2.5. The racism is laughable, I must say. But, you know, we discussed that before. It's almost like it's standard by now. You know what I mean?
All right. And Jay?
Sean's saying it's not Mel Gibson directing these. No, it's Lewis Gilbert directing You Only Live Twice, who directed the same film three times. For bombs.
Yep. Yeah.
You Only Live Twice, Spy Love Me, and Moonraker all have just like kind of identical plots. They just relocate to different like they all open with a craft being eaten by another craft. They all end with two big armies inside a big internal area fighting. I give this one a 2.5. This isn't my least favorite of these, but it's close.
All right, and since there is no such thing as an inadequate Bond film, I'll give it a 3.5. it is one of my lesser Bond films, and of the ones that we looked at today, it's my least favorite. But I can't give a Bond film less than 3.5 stars. Even the horrific ones that we have coming are probably going to get that kind of treatment. All right, and then let's move on to Mr. Lazenby's performance and the one that doesn't feature Sean Connery, doesn't feature a title song, and takes place in the snow. Sean, how about you?
Oh, this is my favorite of the four. This is a 4.5. I find nothing wrong with George Lazenby's performance, even though I did say earlier that it might have suited Roger Moore better to begin with this one. I love it. I love the fact that it tones the action down, but when it does have action, it delivers in spades. So I give it a 4.5. I don't even know why I'm shaving half a star off of it. Hell, I'll just give it a 5.
Yeah,
I'll
give it a 5. Five, man.
Yeah.
Go all
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I'll give it a 5. I'm going to go all out because out of the 4, yeah. 5.
I like that you're willing to commit. I'm not willing to commit quite that much. I'll jump in here. I was going to agree with you on everything, including the rating 4.5. I'll just stick with my 4.5 and save the 5 for the other ones that I have already given 5s to. Okay. But this is an excellent one. I know for the opposite direction, though, that we should probably go to Jay at this particular time.
Yes, this is my least favorite of the four. It's poorly edited. It's poorly acted at times. It's got the best Bond girl of the four, granted, but all the action's in the same place. I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again. Honestly, it was a real slog getting through this one. And it's not a short film. It's like 2.25 hours long. That's like half an hour longer than it should be. I give it 2.5. I wasn't a fan. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, that's okay. I'll watch it again for you.
Good.
Right. And Heather?
I didn't think it was horrible. I was anticipating much worse. I did enjoy the action. I just wish there had been a little bit more in the beginning because it did lose me at many points. And I didn't think Lazenby was a bad Bond. He wasn't. I see why he wasn't Bond again. But for me, this is one that I will probably once again forget about and fall to the wayside. It was a 2.5 for me.
And Jeanette.
Yeah, I'll wife. This one is rough. This is where you have to answer the question, is Bond bigger than the actor playing him? Does it matter who's in the role if the story is good? I'm not sure this movie answers that question. I'm going to go with the, 2.5. It's not one I enjoy.
Wow. Okay. Well, this appears to have been very divisive Bond entry. Let's see if we can be less divisive about the next one, because apparently I think it's going to go a different direction than I expected. Diamonds Are Forever. Well, Jay, do you want to start off?
Because this I is think the best one. It's so much fun. I give it a 4 out of 5. I had so much fun with this one. It's so entertaining. It doesn't take itself seriously. It knows what it's doing, and it's not. It's just being entertaining. Yeah, I love this one. I've stayed in Circus Casino, so yay.
Me too!
Yay!
It's really ridiculous. Crappy now, though. It's a dump now.
But, like, the plot of stealing diamonds to launch a satellite into space to just nonsense. But I've just so much fun. And Winton Kid. Come on. 4 out of 5.
And Heather?
This one's actually all over the place for me, yeah. I've seen this one more than I've seen any of the other ones we discussed today, and I enjoyed it not so much this time. I found myself much more annoyed and less entertained, which I was kind of surprised by because I have fond memories of watching it before. So I'm going to give this one a 2.5.
All right. And Sean?
I've said it like 3 times now. This is a guilty pleasure of mine as a movie. It has its failings. I mean, Sean Connery, it's obviously his worst outing as James Bond. I mentioned at the end of the movie, you can actually see it running out of money. I mean, the ending is terrible. It's worse than the ending of You Only Live Twice. But it's just so damn fun. I mean, it's just so, I can't get over Winton Kid and Bambi and Thumper and all this fun stuff that happens and these gangsters and they put him in the thing and they're going to burn him up, but then he wears a goddamn diamonds and everything is just so perfect. For some reason, if they could just like maybe sort of like redo it, this is never going to happen, but just sort of like there could be fans out there who would just take it and just sort of, I don't know what they would do. Anyway, It's 3.0. I cannot make this better than Live and Let Die. So it's going to be a 3.0. It's all my third favorite of the four.
And Jeanette, we haven't heard your rating yet, have we?
No, I'll go with the 3 on this one. I think a lot of what everyone else has said, for some reason, I feel like I've seen this one a ton. There's a nostalgia factor for this one. It's not good, and Connery is damn near asleep for the majority of it, but he's surrounded by a lot of fun business where it starts to verge off into the more silly range, and I kind of enjoy that. So, yeah, I'm going to give this one a 3.
All right. And I'm going to give it the 3.5 that is my minimum for a Bond film. it earns the minimum. It's interesting because this is one where I run hot and cold on this film. Sometimes I'm a little bit like Sean. It's like, it's great fun and it's ridiculous and it's not good, but I enjoy it. And other times it irritates the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly what it is that is different about it, except maybe it's my mood at the time.
Yeah.
But 3.5 seems like it's a, it at least acknowledges its faults.
Oh, yeah. And my favorite line of the whole thing, he's been bitten by a bug.
Mine was when they throw plenty of tool out the window, and it's like, I didn't know there was a pool down there. That's great.
That was good. That was really good.
All right, and then we're finishing up with Live and Let Die. Jeanette, why don't you start?
4.5 without even hesitating. This is my favorite Bond movie. I'll acknowledge it's not great, but it is, for me, the one I love the most. It's super fun. I really have a good time with it. Roger Moore is my favorite Bond, although I'll go out on a limb and say Pierce Brosnan, I think, is the best Bond.
Whoa! That is quite a limb.
That's a long limb that you're standing on there.
I'm storing that limb off right now.
But this is one of my all-time favorites, and I think it's just because it felt so different, it felt so refreshing, and Moore was just so damn charming. 4.5.
All right. Heather, how about you?
I actually enjoyed this one the more the film progressed. I started to appreciate more.
I'm calling the police.
I'm sorry. It's been a long day. The boat scene, I know that everybody loved, but I loved it. It could have gone on for another 20 minutes and I would have been content.
It felt like
totally.
It did.
It was totally ridiculous and over the top, the finale. The only thing I really did hate about it was the sheriff. I wanted to hit him with the boat myself. But aside from that, I thought it was a lot of fun. And Roger Moore was just fantastic in it. So this one was a 4 for me.
A secret agent? On whose side?
For which side? Sean?
I didn't like this one when I first saw it, and I think the reason is because I thought it was silly that they had voodoo in it and like spells and stuff, and the Bond franchise really doesn't lend itself to that. It's not a supernatural series. But then I got older and I got over myself and then I realized that much like Diamonds Are Forever, this is not going to win any Academy Awards, although it should have been nominated.
It could have.
For best song. It should have been. It may have been nominated. I don't know. It was? Okay, yes. Fantastic. That makes me feel better. It's nonsense. But it's fun. Again, names is for tombstones, baby. Take them out back and put them out. That might have been racist, what I just said. I don't know. I also hate the sheriff. It was? Okay. As usual, just edit that part out for later on.
Repeated again and again and again.
Yikes.
I would give it a 3.5 out of 5. It's just a bit better than Diamonds Are Forever. And I think it's Roger Moore that pushes it up that a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
We can't laugh at it a second time. All right.
Well, okay. I didn't even mean it. It's unintended.
So, Jay, what did you think?
I give it a 4, same as Diamonds Are Forever, just marginally less entertaining, just because of how it's slightly less ridiculous. It's still ridiculous, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You have a Kananga balloon, and I would like they should sell Kananga balloons.
Kananga balloons, yeah.
I would buy them. They should have James Bond conventions.
I'm going to put that together. This is an Etsy product.
There we go.
For sure.
And I will buy it. Okay, I need a hot air balloon.
There's no way you can do that without being racist, without looking like one of those, dolls.
Oh, yes, the very racist dolls.
Yeah.
That my grandparents own some of. Yes. I might cut that out. but yeah, I Live and Let Die is very entertaining. It's the whole ensemble of great characters and a wonderful ending. So yeah, I give it a 4 out of 5. And Roger Moore, right. Better than I remembered.
Good,
yep.
Good. Well, I'm gonna start with a 4. I'm going to add a half star because I love the poster for this film. We didn't talk about posters. It's my favorite Bond poster. So I'm just going to give it an extra half star for that, even though we didn't talk about it.
Nice.
So 4.5 for me. And I think that brings us to a conclusion of our discussion of the 4 James Bond films in this franchise look back. I think we're going to be taking a short break here and be back with a game after these messages from a fellow Lamb Podcasting Network show.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
We're back. Now let's find out what diabolical torture Mr. Cluett has devised to humble all of us.
Wait, that's me. I looked at two of the best components of Bond films this week, which is the theme songs and the various locales that they visit, and I combined these two together for a game that I have not come up with a title yet. Never Sing Never Again. There we go. Never Sing Never Again is our title. I think I've used that for a lampety once. I have taken lyrics from Bond theme songs, and I've plugged them into Google Translate. And then I've plugged them back out again. And when I say it's Google Translate, I've gone from English into Russian, from Russian to Japanese, from Japanese to Zulu, and then from Zulu to English. I am going to read these lyrics, and you're going to buzz in and try and work out what the song is.
No, I'm not.
I love this game. I have no chance, and I love it.
Okay, so these aren't all going to be like the title of the song in them. Some of them are. So these are all title songs from Bond films. You buzz in.
So you want us to give you the movie?
Yes, movie or song title, doesn't matter either way.
Or song title.
Okay.
Buzz in with your name.
Which is the same for most of them, but yeah, not all of them.
Lampety rules, and I'll come to you when... So everyone's playing all of the questions. Okay, and I made this game whilst watching Live and Let Die. it's been a busy week. So, everyone understand the concept?
Yes.
I think so.
Cool. Okay, then let's play. Yes, the door is always open. The woman passes by. Go down in the water. Look at my eyes. Phone table. Man is next to you.
Sean.
Sean.
Thunderball.
I'm sorry, Sean. That's not correct.
Well, what are you going
to
do?
You don't lose any points. You may as well. I'll read it again because it's fun. Yes, the door is always open. The woman passes by. Go down into the water. Look at my eyes. Phone table. Man is next to you.
Richard.
Jeanette.
Die Another Day.
No. Richard, did you buzz in?
I did.
What did you say?
GoldenEye.
No. Heather, all right. Free guess? May as well just guess a film.
The World Is Not Enough.
No, the correct answer, Quantum of Solace. Another Way to Die. It says, yes, a door left open, a woman walking by, a drop in the water, a look in the eye, a phone on the table, a man on your side.
Okay, well, you just, the most least memorable Bond song.
I like that song. If I'm, to be fair. Okay, next up.
Sam Smith?
No, that's the...
That was Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
right.
That's,
oh.
It's the White, Jack White and...
Oh, yes, yes.
Release the Keys.
The Keys, okay. Yes. Quantum of Solace, yes.
Yes, right, so next up. Whatever happens to you, if you have a job, you should do well. You must give hell to others.
Oh, shit,
Richard.
I know this one.
Richard.
Sean!
Richard.
Live and Let Die.
That is correct.
Damn it, yes.
What does it matter to you? What does it matter to you? Etc. I'm not going to sing all of these songs. That's not going to be fun for anyone.
Okay. Yes, it will.
We'll enjoy it.
Some of these are going to be easier than others, just so you know. Next up. No one can make you part of it. Baby, baby, baby. You are the best.
Richard.
Richard.
Nobody does it better.
That is correct. Spoiler loves me.
Oh.
Richard's going to win this game, just so you know.
Sorry.
Next up, the gold girl knows when she lies. This is the
Richard.
Death of
me. Sean.
I think I heard Jeanette first.
Goldfinger.
Yes, yeah. This is the death of Mr. Goldenfinger. okay. Next up, they dance in the fire.
This Richard.
Richard.
That's Oh, jeez. I hate when my it's right there. It's sitting frickin' Duran Duran.
Three, two, one. Richard is
old.
Out on that one.
What happens when you are old? I hate myself.
They dance in the fire. This deadly kiss is what we need.
Sean.
Sean. God.
A View to a Kill?
Thank you. Thank you. I hate myself.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't have gotten it if it wasn't for Richard, though.
That's fine. Okay, next up. We're in the world, only love, no more, under it, just love. We're in the world.
Sean. Octopussy.
No.
Oh, fuck.
We're in the world, only love, no more, under it, just love.
Yeah, I think that was my guess.
We're in the world. 3, 2, 1. He's looking for On Imagine Secret Service. We have all the time in the world.
That's
all the time in the world, just for love, nothing more, nothing less. Only love.
No only love.
Next up. You have a powerful weapon. She has a million guns. Richard.
The man with the golden gun.
Yes, yeah. I have to read this whole thing. You have a powerful weapon. She has a million guns. Inequality killer. A man has a gold bar.
Ooh.
An assassin that's second to none got translated to inequality killer. I'm a fan.
Inequality killer. I thought it was a social justice warrior.
Okay,
three
next up.
Separate nipples. Okay.
Only your eyes can see me all night. Without your
Richard.
Eyes.
Sean!
Richard just got that one.
Oh, for your eyes only.
Yes, without your eyes, I don't have to hide. So. Okay, next up. Yes, no, I'll make some parts. I keep this secret. I'll close my body from now.
What? Oh, Jeanette.
Jeanette.
That's Die Another Day.
Yes. Yes, no.
That was a good one.
That's before you got to the Sigmund Freud part.
Yeah, I didn't want to translate that because it would just come through exactly the same. Okay, next. Dear, you win. It's not fun. Martini, a girl and a weapon.
Oh.
Dear.
Jeanette?
You win. Jeanette.
Tomorrow never dies.
That is correct.
Wow, very good.
Okay. Darling, you've won. It's no fun. Martinis, girls and guns. Okay.
Yeah.
Next up. When it comes down, it becomes tall. Let's meet together. When it comes down, it becomes tall. Let's meet together. When it comes down, it becomes tall. No.
Yeah, your singing is not helping.
I know.
Yeah, is there a penalty for wrong guesses?
No, not at all.
No.
Yeah, then I'm going to, Jeanette, I'll guess.
Yeah.
Hang on. Goldeneye.
No. Anyone else want to guess?
I'll guess. Sean.
Sean.
This one is Octopussy.
No.
Oh, horses.
Richard.
Richard.
The world is not enough.
No.
Heather, okay.
For a guess.
You. Diamonds are forever.
No, it's Skyfall.
Oh.
Of course it is.
Nah.
Okay, next up. So let's hold fast and start flying. Everyone is high.
Sean. That's Octopussy.
That is Octopussy.
All time high.
Okay.
Everyone
time
is high.
Charm.
Okay, next up. You will find any woman she wants. He breaks his heart without regrets.
Richard.
Richard.
Thunderball.
That's correct. That's almost word for word the same. next up. I got permission to kill. And you know, I'm going right into your
Sean,
heart.
Richard.
Heather.
Sean.
License to kill.
Yes.
There you go.
Next up. Good eyes, not a lace or skin. The gold chain takes him.
The what takes him?
The gold chain. Good eyes, not a lace or skin. The gold chain takes him.
Jeanette.
Yes, Jeanette.
Goldeneye?
Yes. Goldeneye, not lace
Tina
or...
Tina Turner, huh?
Not lace or leather. It becomes not a
not
lace or skin.
Not lace or leather. That Tina Turner was awesome.
And the girl's mouth opens and the gun comes out, and it's like, that's kind of weird.
There are more questionable lyrics in the GoldenEye theme song where it's like, I've loved you since you were a child. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, not translate that bit.
That's the U2 song, right?
They wrote it, she sang it.
Yeah.
Okay, next up. I don't know how many of these I'm going to do. I've got a few more. I've gone to the world to find I have to restore love from Russia.
Richard.
There we go.
I'm going to go with From Russia with Love.
And you're going to be correct. Got to throw some easy ones in there. Next. All I need to please is they can encourage and make fun of me.
All I need to please, they can encourage and make fun of me.
Yes. Jeanette.
Jeanette.
For Your Eyes Only?
No.
Okay.
All I need to please is they can encourage and make fun of me.
Sean.
Sean.
Moonraker.
No. Richard, Heather.
I got no.
I'm terrible at this. This is awful.
Okay, well, the correct
answer. I've gotten two right in my head. That's it.
Well, the answer we're looking for was Diamonds Are Forever. All I need to please me, they can stimulate and tease me.
Okay. All right. Gotcha there.
Okay. Unable to deny the prize, he will not meet you. He wants to kill. This is a tricky one. Unable to deny the prize, he will not meet you. He wants to kill.
Heather. Doctor, no.
No.
I guess, though.
You did.
Yes,
well done.
You did. And you guessed first.
And no one can take that away from you.
Nope.
You know what? Sean.
Sean.
Sean. Casino Royale.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
No.
We're just running out of options. That's all there is to it.
Next up. A small country, but this is a good place to start, my love.
Oh, I know this.
A small country.
Well, chiming in.
But this is a good place to start, my love.
Heather. The world is not enough.
That is correct.
Hey, you got it one. There you go.
The world is not enough literally translates to a small country. Okay. I think let's make this the last one. Their dreams were sent not only for the month, but also for gold. I want the love of a person to have and keep.
Heather? Never Say Never Again?
No.
Okay.
But thank you for playing. Their dreams were sent not only for the month, but also for gold. I want the love of a person.
Sean.
Sean.
It's got to be Spectre.
It's not Spectre.
It's
not Spectre.
Speedboat.
Hot shingles with
speedboat.
Jeanette or Richard?
Richard, I'll go with Moonraker.
And you'll be correct.
That is
Wow. Completely random.
Richard wins. Well done, Richard. Richard had 7 points. Jeanette and Sean had 4 apiece, and Heather had 1.
Nice.
I'm very good.
The one for Dr. No is the Three Blind Mice song, which is three blind rats, respective three. Three blind rats. Blind people walking.
Which I didn't. Not my favorite Bond tune.
No. So,
favorite Bond movie, so.
Well done to Richard for winning the game. And I'll hand, as your prize, you get to host the rest of the show.
Yay!
Well, I'm glad to be able to host the rest of the show since it's almost over here. All that's left for us to do is to thank our guests for being with us today.
Plugs.
Oh, we do have plugs to do also. I have nothing to plug. That's what made me think of this. I got nothing new to plug, but I'm sure other people do. Jeanette, have you got something to plug?
I can just plug my site, although it's a little behind on account of the travel. But jwardadventures.blogspot.com. I'll get some reviews up there shortly of The Hustle. Yay. And John Wick 3, Parabellum. And then I'm hoping, we're heading into the big season. You know, the big season with the tent pole stuff.
Summer.
So, looking forward to it. There you go. That's it.
All right, Sean, how about you?
I'm working on the next season of 1001 Movies podcast. It will be up shortly. I've succumbed. I'm frustrated that I'm not getting any movies after 1990. So I've decided to include all of the movies on all editions of the book. So, like, I think the last one is Black Panther. And so I did get finally a movie from 2000. I also, this coming season, we'll talk about Bicycle Thieves, which is fantastic.
Yes.
It's one of those arts, film school movies that they make you watch, but then you don't realize it's good until later on when you're, you know. Columbo Confab, if you enjoy Columbo, check that out. Also, I'm working on a project. I guess I'll announce it now. It's not out yet, but my friend Eric and I are doing what we call the Best Picture Podcast. So each season is a different year, and each episode we look at a different movie that was nominated for Best Picture. And then at the end, we conclude with an episode of, you know, whether or not the Best Picture was chosen or if it should have been one of the other nominees or maybe some other movie altogether. Our first season is going to be about 1986, which is the year that Platoon won. So in a couple of days, we're going to be recording for The Mission, which I'm looking forward to watching. And yeah, that's what I got on the horizon, although that's not out yet. But within a couple months, it will be. So, yeah.
That sounds fun. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Where were we? Heather.
You can find me on headertime.com right now. I have one more post I think I'm going to do to kind of sum up and conclude all the things that has been Game of Thrones and my final thoughts on it now that I've kind of gone through a whole miserable state of depression all week and coming out of it. And next weekend on Sunday, if you want to watch some shaky cam work, I will be
taking
then don't, because I will be doing a video on my 17-mile run next weekend, so you can see
although that would be very exciting.
It's really not. You'll see me just curse at geese and the random things that come out of my mouth while I'm running is, I mean, it's entertaining to laugh at, I'm sure. I'm starting to understand why people actually watch. I literally get into fights with Canadian geese.
Fucking geese, man.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I ran 2 weeks ago. I ran into the road towards dangerous traffic because there was an adult male and female there, and they were hissing at me because the babies were there. No, they are scary.
Nope, they are very
Canadians
serious.
Are wonderful. Their geese are all
their
the
geese
evil.
Are awful.
Yeah, that's the one bad thing Canadians go and put into the world. It's tragic, and I'm scared.
Babies are adorable. Come on.
That's why I went in the street. They were protecting their babies. I still call them names.
Jay, do we have things to promote on the Lambcast, or do you have something on your site?
I was going to say, thank you for assuming there's nothing on my site to promote, because there isn't. Although, if you want to follow me on Letterboxd, I am doing an update of my... I've got a ranking of my Bond movies. You know, I've seen them all, so I could have a list at this point, but I'm doing the list as we do these shows, so I've only got 8 films on there. At the moment, you can see where today's 4 films slot in. I'm Jay Cluett, J-A-Y Cluett. On Letterboxd, you know, spell my surname by now. It's on the iTunes thing I'm looking at. But over on the Lamb scores will have gone up soon, because I haven't done them yet. I've been behind this week for Longshot and where is the tab that I had it open? There it is. For Longshot, Ugly Dolls, and The Intruder. I don't think any of those are going to be bothering the top 10 all that much. we'll see. But it's time to... Clint Eastwood is Actor and Director of the Month. I think one of those... The Actor of the Month will have ended by the time this goes up. And then Natalie Portman is the Actor of the Month for June. So if you have any articles or anything on any Natalie Portman film, then you can send those to Rob. And I think Director's Chair is still open for any films directed by Clint Eastwood. You can send those to Tony. And over on the Lamb's Facebook page, facebook.com/largeassmovieblog, we are still determining the best Clint Eastwood film. Our bracket is down to the final 4. So it is between Dirty Harry, Million Dollar Baby, Unforgiven. Sorry, no, Dirty Harry, Gran Torino, Unforgiven, and Escape from Alcatraz. Somehow, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly lost to Unforgiven, and Million Dollar Baby lost to Gran Torino. I don't know who's voting on this, but they're wrong. So that's our final 4. One of those 4 will be the best one, and I thought it was going to be Good, the Bad, the Ugly all the way through, so I don't know what's going to happen now. Over on the Lamb site, the Movie of the Month poll has ended.
for our June's female directed movie of the month special. 15 films were put forward, and once again I realize this is too many because the vote has been split by quite it's been watered down through a lot of these kind of similar films. Not saying that the winner doesn't deserve it, I just think it might have gone a different way had less films been nominated. But for June, we'll be talking about The Breadwinner, which is put forward by Tony Kogan of Coogs Reviews. So The Breadwinner, if you're not familiar, is an animated film from 2017. It was up for the Best Picture Oscar. Animated Feature Oscar, sorry. And it's by the same people who made The Secret of Kells. And it's directed by Nora Toomey. So we'll see what that's like in a couple of weeks' time. If you have any reviews or features or anything on the Breadwinner, then please get in touch. And if you want to watch it and write some and contribute to the discussion, then, you know, do so. Next week's show is Godzilla, so hooray for that. Back over to Richard.
All right. Well, I did remember I did put up a review of Rocket Man. So those of you who are anticipating that next week, if you want to build your anticipation a little bit more, you can visit the site and see my review of Rocket Man. I'd like to thank all of our guests today for joining us. It's always fun to be talking about James Bond. I look forward to doing this at least three more times before the new Bond film opens, which apparently will probably get pushed back to summer because, holy criminy, Daniel Craig is a delicate old man.
Who is he, Harrison Ford? Oh.
Yes.
You know what? I hate to say it, but maybe if he hadn't been wasting all of our times and let someone else play it, we wouldn't be having these problems.
Touche.
So it's, like I said, we'll have more Bond discussions. There'll be a lot to talk about, but we're probably going to have to end up spacing these out a little bit more than
we'll just have to throw in a show on Never Say Never Again and the other Casino Royale. Or Austin Powers franchise or something.
We'll figure it out.
And Alman Flint. Let's watch those.
There you go. That would be fun.
Got some James Coburn.
All right. So, in no particular order, although obviously there has to be some order, let's start with Jeanette.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. I'm going to bounce across these alligators and get out of here.
All right. Sean, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure as always. And I've got nothing clever to say. Bye.
Heather, thank you for being with us also.
Oh, thank you. All the things I do for England.
And one of them isn't speaking as an Englishman.
Speedboat.
All right. We're all going to keep practicing, and maybe we'll get Celebrity Lamberty in our future. And my co-host, Jay.
Well, seeing as I already host Celebrity Lamberty, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Wow.
Oh,
good.
It's terrible.
Very it impressive.
Let me just say goodbye, or maybe I should say ciao, Bello.
All right. Oh, no.
I'll just sit back and do really bad, impressions then.
Speedboat. Luckily, there's a speedboat chase in several of these.
Stop. Get off
my territory.
I give
you a very good Peking duck.
Jesus.
Yeah, we did get the block where several of them are RAF. Racist duck.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh, some of them are so cringe. So much cringe. It turns out I'm recording as well, so if you need an extra one, I have.
Mine are going too, so we should be okay.
I did not start mine this time.
Mine is run by Skynet, so it just did what it wanted.
Yeah. Oh boy, Skynet. It's always someday.
Listening. It's always listening.
No, it's not so much someday, closer. It's now. It's happening. Yeah.
It's happened.
We're just waiting for the more part.
When I said I wanted a taco an hour ago, and my phone just said, did you want a taco? Yeah, I know. I know you're listening.
Have I told you that my Alexa just started making noise randomly the other day? And when I said, hey, Alexa, what are you doing? She said, I'm always listening and learning.
My God.
That's pretty damn scary. Out the window.
Oh, boy. Listen to this.
You like hammers, Alexa? Because you're gonna.
Now we are.
I was freaked out, but then I told her to play Little Mix, and all was well.
I hate myself.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't have gotten it if it wasn't for Richard, though.
It's fine. Take point.
What?
All
I heard was urethra.
That's my notifications on my phone. That's an Archer quote.
Okay.
About that, I didn't realize it would be on.
I thought it was a voicemail from your doctor, but fine, okay.
Medication reminder from the...
Okay, next up.
Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell.
You've been listening to The Lambcast. If you've got an idea for a show, any improvements we can make, or you'd like to be a guest on an upcoming episode, find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com. And please head over to iTunes to leave us a review. The Lambcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.